Terwan Sarnay. Right, let's begin then. Let's all bring our palms together. And let us make our veneration to the Supremely Enlightened One, the Perfect One, the greatest teacher that mankind has ever had. It is in His footsteps that we walk today, in the hope that we shall achieve the same deliverance and freedom from suffering that He once did, and many others who did, that walked in His footsteps. But as we bring our palms together in veneration, let us also remind ourselves that this is not a mere mark of our respect, but a pledge of our allegiance to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, which represent the truth, the path to the truth, and the practice to attaining that truth. So with that in mind, let us chant the Namaskara, followed by which we will observe the precepts, seeking refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. Let us also invite the countless sentient beings to join us and be part of this meritorious deed, as well as listen to the teachings of the Great Master and attain the same bliss that awaits all of us. So with all that in mind, let us make a start to today's proceedings.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
There's a Mangala Karana, a Mangala Karana in English. Anyone? What's a Mangala Karana in English? Shall we say something that brings prosperity? So the Buddha, in his infinite wisdom and compassion, he outlined a number of these factors. These are harbingers of good fortune. They bring prosperity and they help sentient beings to attain what they have been born to attain, or what they have been born to realize. Oftentimes I speak to you and remind you the purpose of having been born human. I think we talked about this last week, week before as well. So there are factors that are conducive. One of them is called Pubbeta Kata Punyata. This is in the Pali. What it means is to be someone who has previous merit, to have access to merit, and merit in an abundance. Because the truth is this, ladies and gentlemen, no matter what we believe, and although we tend to take credit for the things we do, we tend to feel and believe that it is our actions that bring us, or it is we ourselves that bring ourselves good fortune, it's always our merit. Merit is in your intentions. There is no doer in any of these things. It is only the done. What is done is determined by your merit and your demerit. At the point of intention, karma is done, and karma goes on to bring vipaka. So like cause and effect, it's just like clockwork. So then if anyone wishes to attain this mangala is, it's not someone's name, probably is, There are probably a few Mangalas here. You've heard Mangala and Avamangala, right? But no one chooses to have Avamangala as their name, do they? So Mangala is fortune. It's a good fortune. So the greatest fortune there can be for all sentient beings is what? Nibbana. Nibbana is the greatest fortune. Nibbana is nothing other than freedom from all suffering. That's it. So to attain that, there are a multitude of factors that support that. And one of these is to have previous merit. So before we get into the depths of the Dhamma which helps you to understand Nibbana and to attain that, it's always important to have merits. I always tell you there are two factors that will help you to be successful in these sessions. What are they? Indeed. Number one, to have merits. Number two, attention, to concentrate. So that's why I thought today I want to show you a little bit of a video. This is a video of a recent tour by two of our venerable monks when they recently visited the States and Canada. I showed you one last week, actually two last week, didn't I? So I have one for you today. Typically I leave this till the end of the sermon, but why not pubbeta katha punyata before the sermon? Pubbe is before. Katha is to have done. Punyata is ping, merit. So to have done merit in advance helps one to attain, to help to understand the truths. So before we get into the depths of the Dhamma, what better a way to get us started than to watch one of these videos? And as you do, I encourage you to think about all the goodness that has happened. Can you still hear me? Can you hear me at the back? No, it's just faded. I don't know what happened there. He has run out of merits. Can you hear me now? Okay. So you see, you're running out of merits. That's why I thought we should recharge our batteries first. See, no one did anything, no one touched anything, but it's just stopped working. So before we exhaust all our merits, why don't we recharge our batteries first? Watch this video. And as you watch it, I encourage you to rejoice in all the goodness that's happening out there. How everyone makes an effort to spread the Dhamma. Our intention is not merely to spread the Dhamma. It is to heal hearts and mend minds. The Dhamma is purely the tool. It's the medicine. A doctor is not happy when a patient takes their medicine. A doctor is happy when a patient is healed. That's why even if a patient continues to take their medicine, but if the patient's not healed, then that doesn't make a doctor happy. So then he or she will go as far as it takes within their means to try and change the course, change the treatment, change the drug, until the patient is healed, right? So the purpose of all this work, this effort, spreading the Dhamma, is not merely to spread the Dhamma. This is only a means to a better end. And that end is the end of suffering. So then without any further ado, I invite you to witness this beautiful event where two of our monks left the monastery for a duration of time. And I want you to have blessings in your hearts for all those people whom they were able to go and speak to. They're people just like you and I who have been very fortunate to receive the Dhamma. May they also be able to assimilate all that good wisdom that is being imparted to them. And may they also be able to attain the same bliss and freedom that we all strive for. Shall we? These are your brothers and sisters. Only born to another mother. That's the only difference. Born to different parents. But if we are all connected in this universe, and if we are all one, then all these differences that we see are only superficial. If you recall the sermon from last week, how can you win and another one lose? We all win and we all lose, all at the same time. It's a very important point to get into our heads. Because the moment you understand that, folks, there's no longer any competition. Why do races fight? Why are there wars in the world? You know, these sessions are happening at a very... It's timely. They should be happening every day, every hour. We are on the brink of another Cold War. You know more than I do about these things. You know, we think that there are wars in the world from time to time, right? We have a name for it, a war. But really, if you look under the covers, it's just people's demerit coming to fruition. That's all. And others earning more along the way. There's no such thing called a war. It's not a war. You try across the street and you run into a bus. Right? Or you have an accident of some sort. We call it an accident, but really all that's happened is someone's demerit come to fruition. That's it. You trip and fall. You knock your head on something. We have these various names for these things, but ultimately all it is just that. Demerit coming to fruition. So apparently there's a war going on. I don't watch the news, but people tell me what's going on. You probably do still, so you know better than I do what's going on out there. Is it a war? Is a war on? Well, I want you to redefine what's going on out there. It's not a war. It's people's demerit. When you're in the association of ignoble people, Asat Purusha, your demerits are attracted to you. When you're in the association of Kalyana Mitra, your merits are attracted to you. That's the way the world works. How come you're listening to a sermon right now? Is this your demerit or your merit? Well, have you not done any demerits at all in your life? No sins at all? Is all you've done in your life good stuff? The wholesome good deeds? No, then how come right now it's your good deeds that are coming to fruition? How come it's your merits that are coming to fruition right now, at this moment? It's because you're in the association of Kalyana Mitras, that's why. But at the end of this, you will again be released. Like a herd of animals. You'll be released into the wild. Right now you're domesticated. You'll be released into the wild, and no sooner than you're released into the wild, you'll be on the streets among Kalyana Mitras. You think so? Try bumping into someone and hear them say, Theruvan Sarnai to you. They might shout at you, might even attack you, right? Maybe if you've got your wallet sticking out your pocket, they might nick it, steal it. Someone might just randomly come and strike you for simply no reason at all. Someone will bump into your car and then it's not your fault, but still they will have a go at you. Someone might throw something at you. So what's going on there? How come that didn't happen while you're here? How come when you're here, everyone speaks to you very politely? How come everyone is very courteous to you? Even if you make a mistake, people are understanding. Why is that? But not so when you're out there. It's because here you're amongst Kalyana Mitras. We were not all born Kalyana Mitras. This is what the Dhamma did. See, you're running out of merits again. Today is going to be one of those days. So, what's the problem right now? Is that a technical glitch? Is that what it is? We have these wonderful names for these things. A technical glitch. A technical fault. And as a result of which, we are not able to get what we want. It's not a technical glitch. It's just your merits not coming to fruition. That's it. So you see, even when you're amongst Kalyanamitras, there is only one factor. There are a multitude of factors that make it possible. Assume you're standing and your legs hurt and there's no way to sit. And you're in a room full of people who, if they had a seat, would offer it to you. But there's no chair. Now, even if the room was full of Buddhas, how could they still give you a seat if there isn't one? So you see, there are a multitude of factors. Our merits, pubbeta kata punyata, is what comes to fruition to make all these comforts in life possible. Be that worldly comforts, mundane comforts, as you enjoy in your own lives, as well as the ultimate comfort. What is the ultimate comfort? Nibbana, indeed. So what you witness in that video, ladies and gentlemen, are people just like you, who understand the need of the hour. And they have been so wise to invite the Mahasangha. And there's a lot of work that goes into making one of these programs happen. It's not a walk in the park. There's a lot of work that has to go into making one of these happen. From my perspective, one of the most difficult things is to get the Swaminvahanses to say yes, that they will accept the invitation. In my opinion and my experience, that is one of the toughest things to do, is to get the monks to say yes. Because these are not monks who have not travelled around the world. They're not individuals who would love to take a flight to the States and see what it's like on that side, where it is said the grass is greener. No, they've seen all the green grass. They've been there. They've done all that. Travel the world. Bakulhandra and Mahindahandra are citizens of other countries, and they've traveled the world plenty times. And they've realized that there's no happiness to be found in any of those places. Not in the States, not in Australia, not in the UK, not in Canada, not in any part of this world. It's not even on the moon. That's why they decided that we have to now take ourselves to where true happiness exists. That is to be found within ourselves. So to discover that happiness which is to be found within ourselves, they have come into the Sri, what? Sambuddha Sasana. And the Sri Sambuddha Sasana is to be found at the feet of your teacher. That is where the Sri Sambuddha Sasana is to be found. The great elders Sariputta, Mahamoggallana, Mahakasapa, Anandananda, Rahula, they found it at the feet of their teachers. With humility and humbleness, heedfulness, merit and attention, they had both of these. And they listened to their teachers. And they found that happiness within themselves. It's not that it is at the feet of the teacher, so if you go to the feet, you will find some happiness over there. It's not something physical to be found in any particular location. It is where you learn to discover it. When we say it's at the feet of someone, it means you need to have some humility and humbleness to discover that. There are teachers in the house. Give me a quick show of hands. If you've ever been a teacher. Good. Thank you. Teachers, I love teachers. Wonderful human beings. People who are willing to give a part of them to others, if not all of them. Teachers, you tell me, in your experience, I give you a child who is very smart, but very arrogant, stubborn, big-headed, right? Not willing to do what you tell them to do, they're only willing to do what they think is right. Then I give you another child, who's not that intelligent, not that smart, not all that smart, but very humble. Plenty of humility. Whatever you do, they will say. Whatever you say, they will do. They will follow your instruction to the letter. I'll give you 5 years' time. Which of these two students can you develop. And which one would you like to take on as a student and develop? The first one or the second one? Unanimously? The second one. There you go. Because you have experience of this. It's the tortoise that wins the race, not the rabbit. Because the rabbit is arrogant. He thinks he knows what's right for him. Therefore, although he's equipped with everything that he needs, because he's stubborn, because he's arrogant, he doesn't do what needs to be done. Because that requires humility and humbleness and listening to what the teacher says. Whereas the tortoise, not born with everything they need to succeed, but all these skills can be cultivated within oneself. Because it's the mind after all. The mind can be developed to infinity. See, on my right hand side there's evidence of that. It can be developed to infinity. There's no limit to what the mind can do. The only limitations are self-imposed. This is why a teacher is super important. A teacher helps you identify what those self-imposed limitations are. And because they are self-imposed, whilst you still have a self, it's very difficult to come out of them. You become your own curse. This is why one of the most difficult things to do in organizing one of these events is to get our monks to say, yes, they will. Because they don't want to go anywhere. They'd much rather stay at the monastery, doing what they have come to do in the sasana. Because they have to bid farewell to their teachers. Now when two monks go, one will always be appointed the teacher of the other, so that they're always there. So for that Swami Nuhansa, it's okay. But for the senior monk, no teacher. No teacher in their physical presence. Therefore, what they have to do is make do with the other Swami Nuhansa. Therefore, at that moment, if you are the senior most individual in the sasana, then you must ignore the Sangha Mahalu order and consider your junior your teacher. Conventionally, it is not so. But if you know what's right for you, that's what you have to do. Consider whoever else is there as one's teacher. And that is what I always instruct. Whenever these Swami Nuhansas come to me and they make their final worship before they depart, you can ask them when you see them or bump into them one day, what does Swami Nayakahandru tell them to do every time? I always say, these are my last words on their departure. Look after each other. That's all I ask them to do. You be there for him and him be there for you. That's it. Because Kalyanamitra association is what draws on our merits. And the moment you are not in the association of Kalyanamitras, now you are on your own. If you can fend for yourself, great. If the Kalyanamitra within you has surfaced, then great. But if the Kalyanamitra has not surfaced within yourself, now you need that external support. But that is the part that I find is the most challenging. And then, all the work that has to go to organizing that program. Because it's not like we are in Sri Lanka where there are always people who are willing and ready to listen to the Dhamma. Right? Even if there's a random sermon somewhere, there are banners all over the place. Right? You drive on the streets, by the time you get home, you'll drive past at least 10 or 15 banners about talks that are happening all around the country, in your local area. And they're all open invitations, aren't they? Anyone can go. But in those countries, it's not so. Everything has to be organized. And if it's going to be an event, you have to seek permission. So then you have to inform the authorities. And then you have to let them know who's going to be coming in advance. There's a lot of work, a lot of groundwork that needs to happen. So all of that is done by an organizing team. And they take meetings after meetings after meetings to try and organize themselves. And then they have to ensure that the Swami Nuhansas are safe on their travel. So recently when the two of them had planned to go last Sunday, I think I told you, I woke up Sunday morning and they were still there at the monastery. I was wondering, what are you up to? I thought you said you were going to go. And then they said, planes, the flights had been cancelled. I said, why? That's when I got to know that there was a problem. See how behind the times I am? So I only know something's going on when something happens at the monastery. Otherwise I don't know what's going on out there. But that's okay, you're all there to watch out for us. And to make sure that if there's anything, any threat that's coming from the outside, to protect the Mahasangha, you're always there for that. Therefore we always live in peace. So all that organization has to happen. And then once the Swaminarayans land there, they are collected from the airport. And what people typically tend to do is they offer their homes on a temporary basis, but they offer their home to the Mahasangha. That's what they do. So what they tend to do is they, whoever's living in that household, they will vacate and go and take residence somewhere else. So for the duration of the Swaminarayan's stay, unless they're traveling long distances, for the duration of their stay, sometimes for weeks, they will offer the house to the Mahasangha. And actually when they make that offering, they truly offer it in the sense that I offer it not with an expectation of having it back. So they genuinely offer it. The Swaminarayan's always hand it back to the devotee on their return. So it's in their hearts, it's a genuine offering. So here are the keys, the deeds in the law, in the drawer. If you need it, that's the house for you. So it's an offering to the Mahasangha. Some people have by this point offered their homes several times. These are ways and means in which people earn merits, ladies and gentlemen. You know, they don't get what you get every week, do they? You can go to the monastery, you have a Swaminarayan visit you every week. Two Swaminarayans visit you every week. Every week you get to offer alms. And 1 week a month you get to offer the gift of offering. So you let Swaminarayan go on Pindapatha. But they don't get that. Therefore when they have the opportunity, they will go the extra mile as much as they can. So they offer their homes, and in their homes they decorate it. Some of them they whitewash it. They refurb the house just for the duration of that stay. And then when they have the Buddha statue, they place it there, the Dharmasana, they bring it all in. Surely inspired by some of the things they see on these things, on these sermons, you know, inspired by the work that you do as an offering to the Dharma. The backdrops that you always so meticulously get together and set up, these are inspirations to them as well. And then for the duration of the Swaminarayan's stay, they get to offer Pindapatha. And you must see the devotion with which they do it, because they know that this opportunity will only be there for them, with them for maybe a week, maybe two. And after that, it's gone. So they and they may not even know if Swaminarayan will return again another year. So they make the most of it without taking any of it for granted. Because they understand the value of pubbeta katha punyata. All of this is done before they sit down for the sermon. Did you see them washing Swaminarayan's robes? It's a practice that they have adopted now. So wherever the Swaminarayan stays for a few days, the householder, along with others who come forward and like to take part in that merit, they accept the robe from the Swaminarayan and they wash it, they clean it and dry it, fold it up very, very beautifully, and then offer it back to the monks. Have you washed any robes yet? No? Why not? On the way home, you can buy some from the shop and wash them. No, one day I'll organize something at the monastery for you. You can all go as a Rajagirian family, and you can take over all the merit work that happens at the monastery for that day. From sweeping the premises to cleaning, offering the alms, washing the Swaminarayan's patra. We'll have some robes available there for you as well. And you can wash those robes and earn merits. Ubbedakata punyata. Again, I tell you, there are no such thing called wars, and there's no such thing called peace. So war and peace is merely a conventional name for when demerits and merits come to fruition. So no war lasts forever, but unfortunately the same is said to be true about peace. No peace lasts forever. And why is that so? Because in our journey in samsara, we have done both of these in equal measure. Both bad and good. Therefore, a war is when the bad that we have done comes to fruition. Peace is when the good that we have done comes to fruition. So right now in some part of the world, the environment is such, factors are such, that people who have done, no, it's wrong to say people who have done, because we have all done, both good and bad, but in some part of the world, a lot of the demerit that people have done are coming to fruition right now. That is what you should see when you look at, when you watch the news. When you say there's a bomb's gone off, or there's warfare somewhere, or there's been a fight, there's a battle somewhere going on, right? Whenever you hear this, in your mind, reinterpret that. Ah, this is why you shouldn't do demerit. And when peace is declared again, hopefully soon, when peace is declared again, then how do you interpret that? Now, merit is coming to fruition. See, the thing is this as well. When wars are ongoing, it's difficult to find opportunities to do merits either. Because people are in a state of distress. Right? You're trying so hard just to pull your stuff together and keep your family safe. There's hardly any room or space or the freedom or the peace of mind to go and look after every other one. That's why they have to bring in support from the outside, and they call in for reinforcements. Sometimes these organizations like the United Nations or the Red Cross, you know, they step in to bring support because they have immunity. Because they are self-declared bringers of peace. They don't take any side, right? So by that agenda, then they are immune from enemy strikes, so from strikes. Then they have to bring in those parties. But within your own country, there's very little you can do because you can't step outside. You don't know the next moment when something's going to come flying at you. Therefore, you have to keep yourself at home and look after your own people. See, this is because now demerits are being drawn to everyone. But in times of peace, there's a lot we can do, right? So right now, in our country, there's peace. There are plenty of opportunities for us to earn merits. You can help people. You can go places, find out how people are doing, and if there's anyone who needs your support, and if there's anything you can do to support and help, you can do such things. But in times of war, if there's a battle going on, then you can't do that. Because people live in fear. When fear takes over, it's an overwhelming feeling. When fear takes over, there's, you know, all you want to do is just get back home and keep indoors and stay safe. Or run and hide. Get into your bunkers. That's all you can do. Because every moment you step outside and remain outside, is you're putting yourself at risk. So, our devotees in these countries who invite our Swaminarayan says, they understand the value of merit. And therefore, when our Swaminarayan are there, they do whatever they can to earn as much merits as possible while they have the opportunity. So, one of these days, I'll arrange something for you at the monastery. You can all come. And we'll organize it in a very smart way so that you can all take part in the various meritorious activities that happen within the day. I don't know how much you can go and work in the kitchens, but because that is one heck of a kitchen at the monastery. I mean, it's not a kitchen, it's, I don't know what you would call it, 24/7 operations are ongoing there. I don't think there's ever a moment where the lights get switched off. at night, something's always cooking. If it's not gilampasa, it's breakfast. If it's not breakfast, it's alms, noon alms. If it's not noon alms, it's something in the evening for the children. Something's always cooking in that kitchen. It's buzzing in that place. So I don't know how much I might be able to get you in there, but at least if you can create some space where you can peel some onions, wash some potatoes, or do whatever, I'll see what we can organize. Would you like that?
Yes.
Okay. Then we'll have some robes as well, you can wash, and some prayer mats and things like that, easier to wash and dry. But please return them before you go home. Huh? Because our Swami Nuances are permitted a fixed number of robes. We can't have as many as we want. We are monks. So if you take a robe by mistake, then we'll be without one until you return it. If you take my prayer mat by mistake, then I'll be without one until you return it. We must give as much place as possible for people to earn merits, ladies and gentlemen. This world is only healed by merit. It's wounded by demerit. I can't put it any simpler than that. The world is healed by merit and it's wounded by demerit. Ping and pao. That's how it works. Anger, resentment, jealousy, greed, hate, all these things, it wounds. It wounds the earth. It wounds our entire environment. It wounds the entire ecosystem. It wounds everything. It destroys. Destruction begins from within. Healing, that also begins within. This is why we say man is always responsible for what goes on around him. Animals don't harbor hate, do they? Have you seen animals harbor hate? Have you seen animals take revenge? Being animals, see how good they are? Have you seen a dog take revenge on another? No. They only live in the moment. If they're angry, then they will attack, yes. Without mercy, they will attack. But that's only in that moment. Once that issue is settled, that's it. Sometimes they both go after the same female dog. As friends, buddies. Along the way they go, alright mate, yeah sure, where are you going? They're having a bit of a conversation. And if they find that there's a common prey, a common threat, they will both attack. That's the way it works. They don't harbor hate. They don't have jealousy. I'm not saying animals are innocent. That's not what I'm suggesting. Because it's a lowly life form. This is the result of demerit from the past. Right? So human beings are an infinite times more virtuous, or have to be at least. By their temperament, a human being is an infinite times more sublime, more noble than an animal. But you're only human when you're human in your thoughts. Because there's no such thing called a fixed human. If your thoughts are humane, then you're human. If your thoughts are inhumane, then you're not human at that time. Have you not seen people being very, very angry and very almost ferocious? How they attack their fellow beings, sometimes their own brother? How people fight? Sometimes you see these fights on the streets. I mean, they attack each other like pack of wolves. Have you not seen that sometimes? Have you never been so misfortunate to see things like that? And then someone else has to get involved and pull them apart. Because it's not just a mere brawl. It's a proper fight and going at each other, attacking each other with weapons and so on. There's so much anger. They throw out explicit words and all foul language because they just want to completely destroy the other individual. It's not right to say that they are like animals, because animals don't do that. Animals don't behave like that. They don't harbor hate. They're just annoyed about something. They want to get something, and when that is retrieved, that's it. That's where the fight ends. They don't take revenge. So then what's a human being? A human being is not you. A human being is when you are humane. That's when you are human. Otherwise not. Do you see animals intoxicating themselves? Having a shot every night? The bit before bed? No, right? They don't do that. They don't do that. That's why I say, it's merits that heals this earth and it's demerit that wounds it. Whatever we have around us is our own creation. Whenever you're good, the world around you becomes better. Whenever you're bad, the world around you punishes you for being bad. That's how it works. It's like punishment is served almost instantly. As well as your rewards. When you're good, the world rewards you by giving you comfort, making life easy on you. And when you start to give what is of ultimate happiness to others, then ultimate happiness is what is rewarded to you. It's always what you give is what you get. To me, that is very empowering. I don't feel victimized as a result of this knowledge. I feel very empowered because now I know how to make my life better. I'm better for it. So when the Swaminarayanas are there, another thing that they do is they take the Swaminarayanas out on Pindapatha. And that's also another very beautiful thing that they do. It's like what you do the first Sunday of every month. See, the Swaminarayanas have only come there for a short stay. Wouldn't it be great if they just kept them at home and gave them Pindapatha? Why should they take them out onto the streets? Kind or unkind? Very kind. Because what they're doing is they're healing the country that has given them right of residence. That is what they're doing. So there are people who are natives, locals in that country, who don't know the first thing about Pindapatha. Sometimes they don't even recognize a monk when they see one. Fortunately, they had this peace walk recently, didn't they? The Swaminarayanas in the States. So that gave a huge, may create a lot of awareness about monks and the fact that they are bringers of peace. So that was a wonderful gesture by everyone, not just the Swaminarayanas, but everyone who got involved in that movement. So that was a really good thing that happened for world peace all over the world. So that created some awareness. Now people know Swaminarayanas when they see one. But before that, there were many parts in the world that people didn't recognize a monk. It was just a man in a red cloak. And they would approach them with caution. Just, you know, when people are different to us, we approach them with caution, don't we? That's the instinct. We have an instinct. If they're different to us, just imagine if there was a man whose head was fixed, but the other way around. Like, the eyes were on the back. Would you not approach them with caution? You say, that Mahasona. You'd approach them with caution for one reason alone, that is, they are different to you. Because you don't know how to interpret what is different to you. That is where you feel vexed. How do I interpret that? Is that a threat? I don't understand this. When you don't understand something, you always instinctively feel that it's a threat. But what they do, our devotees in those countries, is they take them out for Pindapatha and they offer their alms bowl, they extend their alms bowls, and now they go around and say, just offer whatever it is you have. Whatever it is you have, just offer some. And then they ask, why? What for? Why are they begging for food? Don't they have anything to eat? And then they explain the whole purpose of a Pindapatha. It's not that they don't have. They have so much that they come here to offer it to you. They're not poor, they're rich. And then they are baffled by their explanation. What they have, yet they come to offer it to us? Then they look at the amrit, there's nothing in there. What do you mean they have? Yeah, so then they go on to explain. It's not they who's poor. It's us. They don't need it. But we need it. That's why we give. So we get. So they explain the whole ecosystem of Pindapata and how giving starts the receiving process. That's a conversation they have. And you bet the following day they're at the sermon. That's how it works. Because now, pubbeda kata punyatana. Now they have given for the cause of Nibbana, therefore in a week's time, in a couple of days' time, they're there, sat in the sermon, listening to what it is these monks have understood and convince them to leave their lay lives behind and take on robes. Then they hear the story, how they were once themselves on the path of education and reached the pinnacle of their careers, very successful, had everything going for them, but then soon realized that in those material pursuits, they couldn't find true happiness and true contentment. See, now they get to hear that story. What was it that catalyzed the whole reaction? That Pindapata. This Pindapata rounds, it opens many doors, ladies and gentlemen. It opens many doors. It's a very beautiful tradition that we have inherited from the legacy of the Buddha. That's why on one occasion the great king Suddhodana, Prince Siddhartha's father, when he went to his native village and went on alms round, the king Suddhodana spoke to the Buddha and said, "Venerable sir, why are you insulting our people? This is not our tradition. We don't go begging on the streets. We are kings. We are royalty. Please don't insult us." This is the king who went on to become an arahant. "Please don't insult us. What is it you're doing? What a shame. What an embarrassment. Please, would you come to the palace? People know that you are my son. And they will assume that I don't look after you. I don't have enough to feed you. The people will think the worst of me. So stop this insulting act and please come in." And at that point, what did the Buddha say? "Oh, great king, that is your tradition. But this is my tradition. This is the tradition of the Buddhas. We don't need wealth. We believe in the universe. We believe in nature. So when I extend my alms bowl out, great king, whatever I have given shall fall into my alms bowl. I believe in that. That is my teaching. That is my philosophy. And if there are days when nothing falls into the alms bowl, then so be it. I have accepted that. And I'm in peace. And then there are days where I get in abundance. And I have accepted that equally. Equanimity is my religion." These are the words that the Buddha would have uttered to the great king. "I can come to you and take my food at the palace. And then you will offer me palatial food and royal food. I can accept that. But I can also go to the poor peasant who will offer me some leftovers from the previous night. And I will accept that with an equal heart." That is the tradition of the Buddhas. And it is the practice of the people behind me, walking in my footsteps. The king was there to offer food to the Buddha. The Buddha offered food for thought to the king. And that got the king thinking. He got on his knees and worshipped his son and took his teaching and resolved that he should himself walk in those footsteps. This tradition of Pindapata is truly a legacy that we must cherish. It is part and parcel of who we are as a people. true that you may not be the ones who take the alms bowls and walk on the streets, but if you didn't exist, Pindapatha couldn't exist either. Because when it's extended, there has to be someone to put something in it, right? So, we both make it work. I alone can't do Pindapatha. If there's no one to offer anything. I mean, that would be funny. Monks going around just with an alms bowl and coming back empty. You have to wonder why they're going out in the first place. There's always a two-way street in the sasana. This giving and receiving. Those who push the boat eventually get onto the boat, if you understand the metaphor. Do you understand the metaphor? Yeah? Those who push the boat eventually get onto the boat. What are you doing right now? Push the boat. Gently down the stream. And one day you will be in the boat, and then you will be rowing the boat. Gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily. So that is why I wanted to give you a slice of what the Swaminarayanas experience when they are there. And the devotees mainly, this is why they organize this. It's not just the sermons that's going on there, ladies and gentlemen. It's not just the sermons. It's the full package. What you experience every week, every day when you're at the monastery, at least once a month when you go to the monastery and offer alms at your local temple, these people, they don't get it very often. There are some places where to visit a monk you have to travel for many hundreds of miles in very rural parts of some countries. In some countries there are no monks at all. But still there are people who want Nibbana, if not today, tomorrow. For whatever reason, they've left behind their families, their homes, gone in search of prosperity, a way to make their life work, to teach their children, to give them a good upbringing. You know, we are not here to judge people's circumstances or why they make certain choices. I myself was on that path. Who am I to judge? He who has not sinned shall cast the first stone, right? As Jesus once said. So who are we to judge? Judgment is not something that is for us. Judgment happens at the karma vipaka level. The universe judges, not us. Our job is merely to be conductors of people's merit. We can be mirrors that reflect people's merit on themselves, back at them. This is what we do as Kalyana Mitras, all of you. So what you witnessed there was a gathering of Kalyana Mitras. There was a lot of effort that went into making that happen. So right now our Swaminarayanas are in the UK. And I think they'll be there till the end of March. So if you have friends, family, colleagues, maybe people who you work with, perhaps you work in an organization where it's remote work, but you know people there. Maybe there are individuals who are not Buddhists. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be a Buddhist to listen to a teaching. Do I have to be a Christian to go to church? Is Christianity only for Christians? No, they speak the truth. Anywhere where there's the truth, where the truth is spoken, it is a gift to all mankind, right? So, if you have friends, family, invite them, encourage them to visit the places where our monks are going to be over the next few weeks. And if they ever get a chance, invite them, encourage them to go wash a robe. And at least, you know, get the feel for what a robe feels like. You can buy one at the shop, but it's not the same as when it comes from one that a Swaminarayanas has worn. The way you feel is different. I mean, I can give you a robe from the shop, I can give you a robe of the Buddha. Which one do you want? Which one would you keep on the altar? Why, they're both cloth. Why is one different? And in an absolute sense, yes, they're all the same. But in the way it means to you, the way it adds meaning to your life, there's a difference there. If you look at the absolute sense of everything, there is no longer space for merit or demerit. That's why Rahatan Mahan says, don't do merits, do they? They do the deed, but no merit is done. Because they look at the world through an absolute sense. Then there is no space for merit. It is only through convention we see merit and demerit. But whilst we are still non-arahants, the merits that we do are what help us to get to a stage where we no longer do merits. Not because we don't want to, but because merits themselves make no sense. But too little too soon is no good. We shouldn't hurry ourselves to get to that point. We go through the process. This is a journey. See, now I'll give you a very simple analogy. If you wanted to leave this building, where should you be? This floor or the ground floor? Which floor? The ground floor, right? There are two ways to get to the ground floor. One, you can take the stairs or the lift. The other is you can jump on the balcony. Both ways, you will get to the ground floor. Which one do you choose? Why? The answer is so obvious that it doesn't even warrant an answer. Right? Because one way, if you choose the stairs or the lift, then once you are down there, you can enjoy being on the ground floor. You can enjoy the efforts of your hard work, climbing down the steps, making that effort. You can just enjoy the fruits of your labor. But whereas if you jump from the balcony, can you enjoy the fruits of your labor? That's the difference. So you see, this system, this universe is designed to always have a path, the method to get to A from, to get to B from A. Wherever you are, to get somewhere, there's a path, there's a way, there's a method. If you are poor, think of a poor man, a very poor man, his attitudes are poor. That's what I always mean by poor, right? He wins the lottery. He wins the jackpot. Now he's a millionaire. Then there's another man who works hard. He goes through all the challenges of life, the ups and downs. He learns from life. He jumps through all the hoops to get there. He educates himself and he becomes a rich person within himself and he gets his million. Which one do you think will be able to hold on to his million for longer? The first one or the second one? The second one. Because the second one has deserved it. The first one just got it without the deserving. Didn't go through the journey. So for anything to remain with you for any length of time, you have to go through the journey, the process, the method to actually acquire it. When you take shortcuts, it'll cut you short. No matter what you try and achieve in life, if you take the shortcut, it'll cut you short. That's not to say extend, take the long cuts. Don't take long cuts. It's not long cuts, what are they? You don't have to take the scenic route. But you just follow the process. There's a path for everything. If there's a path to get to Nibbana, there's a path for everything, isn't there? So if you want wealth, if you want to acquire wealth, there's a path to it. There's a right way to do it. Do it the right way. If you want to educate yourself, do it the right way. If you want to get yourself a good job, do it the right way. Don't steal. Don't copy your answers from someone else. Never teach your children to do that kind of stuff. If you cheat in life, life will cheat you. Remember, it's never the action. It's always the intention. The intention is always recorded up there. So you can pass an exam by cheating. But you will have to live with the guilt of having cheated. That is the punishment. And that punishment is a life sentence. Every time someone brings up the subject, you know, even if no one else in the room does, that you are a big cheat. And how does that feel? If ever you have cheated in life, right? Don't all blink at once. If you have ever cheated in life, you know, be it some, you know, whatever, the minus thing, the smallest thing. Just think about how that made you feel. Whenever someone brings up the subject, it always leaves a mouth in, a bad taste in your mouth. You feel like it's very cringeworthy. But you have to put up a pretense and show like, you know, nothing ever happened. That you are good and you have always been good. But putting up that show is the toughest thing to do because your insides have rotten. And your outsides have to make up for that. That's a very difficult thing to do. When inside you are rotten, but on the outside you have to show that you are good. Isn't it? Isn't that such a difficult thing to do? That's why it's always best to be who you are within yourself. You know, with the right people, to your teachers, for instance, you know, just show them who you really are. This is who I am. I have my weaknesses, I have my flaws, I have my faults. When this happens, I get angry. When this happens, I'm sad. Now, in our Srila Shravaka Shravika Srila Vesi programs that are open to our devotees at the monastery, this is what they get to do with their teachers. It's what you do when you take these counseling sessions with a Swami Nuhansevananda Garika Mahatmya. But that you only get to do very ad hoc. But at the monastery, there's a regular. It's regular. At least once every 2 weeks, they get to sit down with their teacher. And it's an opportunity to open up. Here's who I really am. And the Swami Nuhansevananda goes, really? I could never have guessed. Well, Swami Nuhansevananda, that's because in front of other people, I am this person. But deep down, this is who I really am. And boy, oh boy, doesn't it stink. But that's okay, because that's the time to wash. It's the time to sanitize. It's the time to clean. And so like a good doctor does, the Swami Nuhansevananda takes the antiseptic and starts washing their patient. That is a very beautiful coming together of a doctor and a patient. It's a time to heal. These teacher meetings are an amazing gift of the universe. It's a time when, without a shadow of a doubt, people's good merit come to fruition. Because you are sat down in front of a Kalyana Mitra. Can you say the same about your husband or your wife? Are you always sat down with a Kalyana Mitra? Or sometimes a Kalyavana Mitra? Do they always talk to you to free you from desire, aversion and delusion? Maybe now a little bit, but more times than not, it's to actually ignite the fires of desire, ignite the fires of aversion and to ignite the fires of delusion. Therefore, both of you need a teacher. If you can become the other one's teacher, then wonderful. Some of you come up and when you talk to me and say, Swami Nasa, this is my wife and this is my husband. And I know the fact that you're both in the path, from what I know. I encourage you, and I have, and I think you there are individuals here who will bear evidence to that. I encourage you, that's very good. Always be her teacher and always be his teacher. In your life as husband and wife, you do whatever you have to do, but bear in mind that in each other you will not find happiness. What you sought in each other you know now is not there. But the social construct has been formed, the knot has been tied, the engagement has been done. Now you continue as husband and wife, but be Kalyana Mitras to each other. That's what you can do. It's what I did with my wife before I decided to come into robes. When I got the Dhamma for a good few years, she was my noble friend at home, and I was hers. That's what we did. So we practiced. And instead of igniting raga, dvesha and moha within each other, we decided to help extinguish those fires. So whenever there was a problem, we helped each other to apply the Dhamma. Because we realized that Dhamma was a true gift. Nothing else could heal us. Our parents couldn't heal us. Husbands and wives couldn't heal us. Good food couldn't heal us. A nice warm bath couldn't heal us. A walk in the park couldn't heal us. No cake, no ice cream could heal us. Traveling the world couldn't heal us. All the money in the world couldn't heal us. Only the Dhamma could heal. So once we came to that realization, then we realized true love has to be sharing the Dhamma with each other and encouraging and reminding each other to be mindful of the Dhamma. That is what I think true love is. It's not about how much can I get from the other person. It's about how can I help the other person get what they truly want. Whether that is from me or not. Doesn't matter then. It's about working yourselves to a point where you're no longer necessary in that relationship. Working your way to obsoleteness. Not something they would encourage on the poor, right? Work your way to obsoleteness. What is the promise you make to each other? Till death do us part. See? For better or for worse. That's good. All these are good promises. But how many of those promises are truly kept? For better or for worse? Really? How many of those promises are truly kept? But that is only because the Dhamma has not entered their lives. So, you know, here's what I would encourage young people who want to get into relationship and they're still not convinced that the noble path is the life for them, and that's fair enough. Right? There's a time in life where you feel you're ready. But until such time, once you get together and you decide you want to become three, when two wants to become three, have the Dhamma as your first child. Your first child has to be the Dhamma, the Sasana. Have that as your first child. Cherish that child. So when a child is born, or just before birth even, when the mother becomes pregnant, don't they both invest time in trying to find out what the mother is going to go through during their stages of pregnancy, how the mother's habits are going to affect the child? Don't we do that? As parents, you must all know. Then you go to the doctors, you go to the clinicians, you go to the specialists, and you learn about what it is to be a mother. What are the stages of pregnancy and how the child is going to be developing inside the womb. And then once the child is born, what do you do? Again, you do the same thing. You study about the child, don't you? You call the midwife, you learn those lessons, you go to the clinics, you learn about them. You learn about the child, how the child is going to grow, you plan for it. See, you invest a lot of time that you initially only invested within yourselves or with each other, now on the child. So when you have a child, you find the time and space for the child. It's almost automatic, you find that time. Even the busiest of people will always still find time for their child, because the child is precious to them. So in your families, if you want to have a child, I suggest you, the first child you have is the Sasana. And if you have a surname you want to give the child, then it's Sasana and the surname. It's not visible. Of course, there's no child to see. But do remember this. Every other child will leave you one day. Come one day, every other child will leave you. Yes or no? Mothers, fathers, every other child will leave you. This is the child that won't. Therefore, whatever you put into that child will give you back in return. Every other child you feed, they will eat and they will grow, and one day the fruit will be plucked by someone else. Come on, mothers, you know this. You remember how you held them and you breastfed them? And you soothed them and kept them, you stayed up through the wee hours of the morning and fed them until they were strong enough to eat solid, something solid. And then even then they couldn't chew. So what did you do? You took the soft food and then you mashed it. Yeah, and you gave them mashed baby food. All of that the child consumed. And then after a point you started cooking at home and giving whatever you could eat, you gave the child. So for 20 long years, 20, 25 long years, your child ate whatever you fed. I mean, usually, when you rear cattle, now take a pig for instance. If a farmer rears, feeds a pig, at the end of that process, what do they expect? To be able to sell it for meat. Right? If it's not selling for meat, if it's your own pig, in some people places they do that, they feed the pig, and once it's once it's ready, you cull the animal and you take its meat. So whatever you have fed, it gives back to you, right? Have your children ever done that? Whatever you have fed them, what have they done? Someone else came and plucked it. Some other woman came and plucked him. Fathers, all that effort you put into bringing your daughter up, protecting her from everything, giving her every safety. You were there when the class finished. You were there outside waiting to pick her up. Right? You were there to go and make sure that she didn't feel scared at night. You sat down and read her bedtime stories. I made sure she was comfortable under the duvet and kissed her forehead goodnight, kept her safe. When she had problems, when she had troubles, when she had worries, you sat down and listened to every story that she had to say. Sometimes the same story over and over and over again. When you had to read those bedtime stories, some stories you must have read 100 times because your child still wants to hear that first story. That story. It's her favorite story. So you have to read it 100 times. And every time you read it, you have to make it sound like you're reading it for the first time. You're sick and tired of that story. How many times can you read Peter Pan and be excited about it? How many times can you read Cinderella and be excited about it? You know the story. But you did it nonetheless because that's what your little girl wanted. Then you taught her good manners. You taught her to protect herself and keep her safe from the jackals and the wolves out there. But once she came of age, 20, 25, 20, around that age, some boy came and snatched her. Before she was gone, she had already given her heart. In her world, you were her king. Until another Prince Charming turned up. Then you were the Viking. When she found her new king. But she kept you as insurance. So when she found her new king and she started going out with that charming young prince, and then later realized that he was only there for something else, later broke her heart, then she came back home running and crying. Then what did you have to do? Sit down with her, placate her, listen to all her sob stories, and ensure that you're always there for her. So you thought she learned her lesson. You thought she'd learned her lesson. Fast forward another 6 months, six if you're lucky. Fast for another 3 months, it's time to rebound. Then came another prince. Then, during that phase of transition, you're king again. But again, when she finds a new king, you become? What? Viking. Because you're the one who was, why? Why is he ringing him? Always the one asking why. So you become the Viking. See, this is what happens. So these children, they always leave you. You're a convenience to them. It's like a convenience store. When you want something, late at night, and it's too difficult to go looking for a supermarket, you go to the convenience store, right? That's why they're called convenience stores. You can get your milk, your bread, your butter, your newspaper, right? That's what we call the convenience store. So parents become a convenience store at some point, and the supermarket is someone else. This happens. This is why I say all these other children you will have, the second, third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, they will always leave you one day or the other. See, I left my mother. But now, my mother always wanted a son, a grandson. I'm giving her one now. What, Jamin Mansa? You dirty-minded people. Every week I talk to her and my father, and I give them a child that will never leave them, a child that will always be there for them. What child do I speak of? The sasana, understanding of the Dhamma. If my parents had invested the time they had invested in me, in the sasana, they would not have needed me. That is the honest truth. And how great if that could have been the truth. How good if that could have been the truth. They only needed me because they didn't have their first child as a sasana. I was their first child. Blood, flesh and bones, that was their first child. I encourage all parents to have the sasana as their first child. If you bring that child up properly and invest your love, your time, your energy in that child, trust me, you will not need another one. You won't need another one. But if you don't do that, the next one won't do it either. Then you will need one after that, and one after that, and one after that, until you are tired and you can no longer have children, only because you are tired. Because a child is not just for Christmas, right? Once you have it, you have to keep it, bring it up, look after it, fight every battle on his behalf or her behalf, listen to all the lies and teach them right from wrong. So for those of you who've had their first, second, third even, but didn't have the sasana, maybe you can adopt a child now. Adopt a child. Adopt the sasana. That is the only child that will not leave you and forsake you. They will always be there. When you're on your deathbed, maybe one of your children will be in Australia. They're too busy because they're surgeons in Australia, so they're treating other patients. There's another child who's a company director. He's in the UK. He can't leave and come and see you because he has to run his company. There's another child who's a scientist. He's working on some advanced research work, so he can't leave and he's in Canada. There's another child who you married off to a rich businessman. She can't leave and come back because her husband won't let her. So, all those children that you had, you're on your deathbed, no one there for you. No one's there to hold your hand. No one's there to stroke your head. No one's there to call you Amma. It's okay, I'm here for you, no matter what. See, this day is going to come to all of you. I suggest before that day comes, you adopt this child if you haven't already. Adopt the sasana. Adopt the sasana. This child will always be there with you. My parents are aging now, much quicker than they used to. That's how age works, isn't it? It's not a straight line, is it? Once you start aging, this is time, this is age. They're not one and the same. And how old do you feel? It's not like this, is it? will be like this. The older you are, the older you age, or the faster you age. So my parents are now aging much faster than they used to. Those days a year felt like a year, but now I think a year feels like five. So I'm working hard to help them adopt a child, even at their age. Because I can't guarantee them that I will be there when they need me all the time. But this child, they will. That's what I tell. I told you earlier, my mother always wanted a grandson from me, which I couldn't give her because that is not the life that I wanted. But now I have found another way. So now she's an Achyamma. You can all adopt a child. Adopt the sasana. But to do that, you must understand what the sasana is. Think about, you know, why I show you these videos, ladies and gentlemen. Think about how precious it is to people who have it very few and far between. Today we have it every day, we see it every day, we see it once a week. We see the robe, it's like commonplace now. But if you lived in some of those countries, if you forget the countries, if you lived in an era where there was no Buddha, a Buddha-less era, where would you see the robe? You would see bald-headed men, but they wouldn't be speaking the Dhamma. This is not any old cloth. This is the chivara. Chivara is a siuvara. A vare is a boon. Siu is the four. This is the four boons that we carry. What are the four boons? Baboons. What are the four boons? The four noble truths. These are the four boons. Why are they called boons? Why are they called a vare? Why is it a boon? Because it is the treasure. It is the gift. A boon used to be given by the king to peasants when they for pleasing the king. When the king was pleased by their service, by their sacrifice, by their commitment, by their loyalty, what did the king used to do? They would give a boon and say, for having accomplished that task, my dear man, I give you this many acres of land. That is your boon. And from here on, it becomes your family's legacy. So then it was a boon. In the same manner, the four boons are the boons that will help you. This is the reward for your hard work. And that hard work is the sasana. For you cherishing the sasana, for you protecting the sasana, for you preserving the sasana. Not for someone else, but for yourself. And as you do it for yourself, you end up doing for others also. I don't ever expect you to do the sasana for someone else, because then you have not understood the sasana. For someone who tries to do the sasana for someone else, they haven't understood the sasana. That's like a doctor who doesn't eat healthy. Imagine that. A doctor who understands how the body works. They're a nutritionist, for argument's sake. But they don't eat healthy. They have very poor dietary habits. That's pointless, right? I mean, I wouldn't go to a doctor like that. Because they don't believe in what they preach. They don't practice what they preach. So I don't want any of you to preserve the sasana for someone else. That is not the sasana you're preserving. The sasana is not the stupas, it's not the pagodas, it's not the bodhi trees, it's not the Buddha statues, it's not the Dhamma halls, it's not the poyages, it's none of them. The sasana is Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. Buddha is the truth, Dhamma is the path to that truth and Sangha is the practice. Where do these things happen? Happens within us, happens within you. It's a transformation that happens within us. So that is the sasana, ladies and gentlemen. That is the child I invite you to adopt. This child will never leave you then, because it's within you. Feed that child wholesomely, and it will never leave you hungry. Your children might leave you hungry. Dare I say, your children might leave you hungry one day when they have everything they need, but sometimes maybe your daughter-in-law or your son-in-law is not happy about the fact that they want to care about you. Your children want to care about you. In such an instance, they may have everything they need, but you will not get a grain of it. It could happen, sorry to say. Am I bursting any bubbles here? Or am I just repeating what you're going through right now? That could happen. And you've heard of plenty of stories like that. Things going on around the world. But this child, if you feed this child, every bit of love, devotion and commitment you feed this child will be repaid multifold. Whatever peace you enjoy today is because of the sasana. Let's be honest. Whatever happiness and contentment you experience today is because of the sasana. Not me, the sasana. I'm not the sasana. Sasana is happening within me, but that is for me. When sasana happens within you, that is for you. So you're also going to be aging soon. Right now, you're just going through the numbers. That's what they say, age is just a number until you're really old. Then it's no longer just a number. Until you're alone, then age is not a number. Once that strikes, and loneliness strikes, and it engulfs you like a demon, always there, like a ghost. In these moments, ladies and gentlemen, you need something to protect you. That is the insurance. So invest in something that is never going to leave you, forsake you, abandon you, jump ship before you do. This is what I am doing for myself, honestly. This is what I am doing for myself. I know that Guru Hamdar is not going to be there forever. The other Kalyanamitra Swami Mahanses are not going to be there forever. My ears won't work forever, my eyes won't see forever. There's going to be a day, a time, when I'm going to be all by myself. So when I'm by myself, I need my child with me. And it is that child that today I nurture, I feed. I feed my child wholesomely. And I keep my child safe and protect it from harm, from bad views, from bad friends. I speak of the mind, and the mind with the Dhamma, the sasana. The mind alone is not the sasana, the Dhamma alone is not the sasana. When the mind and the Dhamma come together, that is the sasana. See, sabba papa sakarana. Is that just the Dhamma, or is it just the mind? It's the mind and the Dhamma coming together, isn't it? Sabba papa. Papa happens where? In the mind. Sins happen in the mind. But can the mind free itself without the Dhamma? No. Then how does sabba papa sa akaranang happen? When the mind and the Dhamma come together. So sabba papa sa akaranang is to refrain from all sins, all wrongdoing. So to refrain from all wrongdoing, the mind that does the wrongdoing has to come together with the Dhamma. Then, kusalasa upasampada, to engage in merit, to engage in wholesomeness and goodness. Can the mind do that alone? Can the Dhamma do it alone? No. So the Dhamma and the mind have to come together. That's when kusalasa upasampada happens. Sachitta pariyodapanam, to free the mind of defilements, to cleanse the mind of defilements. See, sachitta, there you have the mind. And to cleanse the mind, you need the Dhamma. So can either of these two things do it alone? No. Then sachitta pariyodapanam happens when? When the mind and the Dhamma come together. So, sabba papa sakarana, kusalasya uprasampada, sachitta pariyodapana, you complete it. Etan, buddhana, sasana. That is the buddhanu sasana. That is the sasana. That is what I meant. So if the sasana is that, and I encourage you to adopt that as your child, then what I mean is, you already have the mind, that mind is already yours. Now what you need is to bring the Dhamma to your mind. That is what you saw on screen. That is what those people are doing. Creating a conducive environment for them to practice the Dhamma, to understand it, to realize the truths. That's why they invite bearers of the Four Noble Truths to visit them and to share with them the Four Noble Truths. That is why when they hold that robe, they hold it with such respect and devotion. This is the flag of the arahants. Wherever you see the robe, you know that arahants once lived. Arahants existed. Arahants prevailed. This is evidence of that, ladies and gentlemen. This is a symbol. Like the Buddha statue is a symbol. It's just clay, otherwise. It's just rock, otherwise. It's just pestle and mortar, otherwise. But it's a symbol. A symbol of something timeless. The Buddha statue is not timeless. It'll break. It's brittle. You drop it, you knock it, it'll shatter into pieces. But whatever it symbolizes, that's timeless, isn't it? So think about all this. As we are speaking on the topic of merit, I want to introduce you to an opportunity. So fortunately, I've told this to you before, being the appointed Nayakahandru at the monastery, I get the opportunity to get involved in practically everything that goes on in the monastery. My life is just full of merit. Every waking moment, I get to hear, see, do, touch, feel something that's going on at the monastery that's of service to mankind. Not just to mankind, but to devas and brahmas and all sentient beings, even the pretas, because we organize the Dolospirikra pujas as well, and the merit transfers and all of that good stuff. So when I get to sit in these conversations, these discussions as to how we can make these opportunities work, one thing that came to my mind was that some of these activities, these initiatives that happen within, or that spring up within these conversations, are soon translated into actual things that people can do, and through our Swaminvahanses and our devotees who closely associate with our Swaminvahanses at the monastery, because they visit the monastery regularly, they get to be informed of such activities. And what generally tends to happen is they get involved, and in various ways in which they are able to do, they make it happen. So for example, assume that we needed a teacher. Let's say we needed a Spanish teacher. As an example, we don't need a Spanish teacher right now, we have one. Just saying. Assume we needed one. Imagine we are in a meeting, we are talking about this. So we are talking about our language school, which we have at the monastery. And then the Swaminvahansa says, actually we need, there are a few of our Anagarika Mahatmyas or Swaminvahansas who wish to learn Spanish, and we are looking for a Spanish teacher. So some Swaminvahansa in the audience will then convey this message to some devotees who regularly make contact with them, or there are others who get to know about it because they are related to them. Maybe because they are parents or friends, close friends, or maybe siblings and so on. So what happens is typically within a day or two, a Spanish teacher shows up. So someone got the opportunity to earn that merit, not necessarily by teaching Spanish, but by putting a teacher in touch with us. There are things like that. Then there are other opportunities where, assume that we need some beds to be made so that we can take in a few more children. So when we do up a costing for that and plan it out, then again there are individuals who get to know about it. So the closer people are to the monastery, the more they get to know about this. So I was thinking to myself when I was in those conversations, I only get to talk to the Rajagirians once a week. And you only give me 2.5 hours to speak to you. So in these 2.5 hours, it's time. In these 2.5 hours, I come with no agenda and I want to share the Dhamma with you, as well as maybe once in a while show you a nice video so you can rejoice in your merits, as well as to share with you some things that's going on at the monastery. But sometimes it's pretty late when I inform you. So the moment I inform you, the day after, it's already happened at the monastery. So because I saw that this was a bit of a challenge, and I asked Guru Andro, would it be okay? I have half my family is in Rajagiriya, the other half is at the monastery. Would it be okay if we had an opportunity, a way, a platform to inform interested individuals in this community to be informed of such events? So he thought, and he said yes. So I've been thinking about how we could do this over the course of the last week. And so I want to introduce this opportunity. Okay? This is for individuals who wish to adopt the sasana as a child. But remember, this is not you doing it for someone else. That should not be the first thing that should come to your mind. You're doing this for yourself. Others will benefit. Who did the Buddha become a Buddha for? First and foremost, for himself. What about us? We benefit from it. That's what it is. We benefit from it. So we are a bonus. The Buddha got the first prize. He got the lion's share. So what I thought we could do is we have now, I'm going to introduce you to this thing called Pinketa. Pinketa, not Katha, Ketha. Ketha is a field, Ping is merit, the merit field. This is an opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, to cultivate the unparalleled field of merit, which is the sasana. If you have been with us for long enough, you know that this is an opportunity. If you ask me what have I given to the sasana, all I have to show you is myself. This is what I have given to the sasana. Before I came into the sasana, I gave what I had. Today, I have given myself. Because I have nothing else to give. I gave everything and then I had nothing else to give. And then they asked, can you give some more? And then I jumped. It's like throw everything into the fire. Right? Once you've thrown everything and they ask for some more, what can you do? You jump in. So that's what I did. But I'm not asking you for that right now. Although if you are ready, you can do. But this might be something that you will do eventually. This. But for that, we have to pave the path. So that is what Pinketa is going to do for you. Pinketa is a voluntary opportunity. That is, it's non-obligatory. I hope you would not insult me and the sasana by assuming that this is a solicitation of any sort. If that is so, please don't join it. That is why it is designed in this manner. It is voluntary. And no one knows who's in it. No one knows who's not in it. Only you do. Of course, and the monastery, because you will have to deal with the monastery to support such initiatives. And this is not about your money, because in some instances we don't need money. In some instances what we need is a teacher, love, compassion, time. Time is more precious than money. You can give an hour and get $100, but can you give $100 and get an hour? Is there a shop that sells time? No, there are shops that sell money. Aren't there? Don't you go there Monday to Friday? Shops that sell money? You give them something and they give you what? At the end of the month, they give you some money. But there aren't any shops that you can give some, whatever it is you have, and buy time in exchange, right? Therefore, there are individuals who are money poor but time rich. And that's perfectly fine. Because when they give time, they're giving something far more valuable than money, actually. Then there are those who have experience. Maybe someone has experience working in a certain field, maybe in a certain discipline, maybe in a certain sector. Perhaps it's education, maybe it's health. There are those among you who have joined our medical team, and you come and look after our Swaminarayans, our Anagarikas, and you treat them. There are those among you who are teachers to us. I rejoice in all this. And this is a thank you in a way. There are those among you who are teachers. You come and teach our Swaminivasas and monks languages so that they can take the Dhamma far and wide. Then there are those who support the monasteries, everyday expenses. There are those among you who give the first and foremost of your earnings every month, because you understand the first and foremost, if you give to what is supreme, then you will always get the first and foremost wherever you go. What you give is always what you get, ladies and gentlemen. If you give the last piece, you get the last piece. If you give in the middle, you get the middle. If you give the top, you get the top. It's not in the way that you allocate it, it's in the thought. That's what it is. You know, if I gave you, as an example, I gave you $300 bills, right? To give the first and foremost, must you hand back the first note I gave you? What do you think? So I gave you $300 bills, okay? I said, here's one, here's the other. Just imagine this is a hypothetical situation, scenario. I give you $300 bills, and then you want to offer or give to someone the first and foremost of what you have earned out of that transaction. Must you give the very first note that was handed over to you? What if you left it somewhere, and then while you're looking away, someone just came and shuffled it? And then now you can't do that merit anymore, can you? You can't do that anymore because it's all been shuffled now. Is that so? No, it's not. It's not in the object. It's not in the object. Merit is not in the object. It's in the thought. It's in the intention. Intention has nothing to do with the object. That's why I've always told you in the sasana, it is the intention. It is always the intention. So wherever you are, whatever you do, in whatever capacity that you can. Now there are some individuals who know people who can help in various situations. It's not you personally, but you know someone who can help. Maybe who you know someone who can give us some advice, some guidance on how to get things done, how to follow the procedures and the processes and the methods to get some approvals, for example. So the pinketa is that. It's an opportunity for you to adopt your child, the sasana, and nurture it in whichever way it is possible to you. Must you lend? Must you borrow? No, just give what you can, what you have. So the way it's going to work is this. I have asked for them to create a form, a Google form, through which you can register your interest. So it will have some very basic details about how to contact you and a number through which we can create a separate group, let's say a WhatsApp group. In that WhatsApp group, we will post from time to time the things that we need to get done at the monastery. It could be for the foundation, the Vimukti Foundation, which is our social service arm, or it could be for the sasana. It's always for the sasana anyway, but it could be directly to the monastery. Either of these two things could get posted there. But it's a one-way channel, by which I mean things get posted and you can rejoice in it. If a sadhukara is what you have to offer, wonderful. Then a sadhukara is what you have offered. A sadhukara is a blessing for it to be a success. That's enough. There will be others who can do a little bit more than that, and then they will get together and make it happen, but with your blessings. Perhaps without your blessings, it wouldn't have worked. Do you see how every little bit is equally important here? Once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's merits that make goodness happen, not money. It's not money that makes good happen. Is it a war again, I ask you? Two countries are not at war. Two countries are right now suffering the consequences of their demerit, of the people who live in those countries. Maybe demerit they had done eons ago, maybe lifetimes ago, but now those demerits are being drawn. That is what's going on. It's not a war. It's just a name for when demons start to come as consequences. So you will register then through this form. You will provide some basic details. And they will add you to a group. And in that group, they will post opportunities for you to first be informed so you can rejoice. And if there are some opportunities, so in each of those opportunities, it will say whether it is some knowledge we need from someone, your experience, or whether it is a contact that we are trying to get hold of, or maybe there's a cost to making something happen, and here is what the cost is for that particular project. So you can look at that and see what you're comfortable with and how you would like to get involved. Do you understand that this is a non-solicitory, but a non-obligatory, it's completely voluntary initiative we are doing here? So that gets posted there. If you like what you see and you want to get involved, you send a private reply. So it's not about adding to the group, because it's not a two-way group. You send a private reply and say, I would like to support that initiative in this manner. And then someone will contact you personally and discuss what is possible, and then we'll make it happen. And once enough of you get involved, then we can reply back to the group and say, thank you all for your support and your interest. That task is now done. Then everyone give a sadhukara. If at some point you feel that you no longer want to be involved in that, all you have to do is what? Exit the group. Must you exit this group as well? Must you exit this group as well? No. This is for your salvation. This is where we do kusal. That is ping keta, not kusal keta. This is kusal keta. This is where kusal happens. We hear, we listen to the Dhamma, we take in the Dhamma, we let it transform us within, and we become better people as a result of that. So that opportunity will be made available from later today. We will initially post the link to the page on the common WhatsApp group. I think there's a WhatsApp group that you're all part of. The monastery's official, I don't know. I think there are a few, but there must be an official WhatsApp group, I think. I've not seen it, but I'm informed that there is one. So it'll go in there. And then there'll be the form. You click on the form, you provide your details, and submit it. You will then be added to another group that will be run by the monastery. So someone in the monastery will be overseeing the messages there. It'll be a one-way group, so you will not be able to reply to it, only see what's posted there. But you can give a sadhukara. I think you can react to these messages but not reply. I think that's how they work. But if you ever feel that it is not for you, what must you do? What must you do if you don't feel that that's for you? Leave. Which group? This group? No. That group. And then if you leave that group and you want to join another day, right? You submit another form. You know what we're going to do? She came in once and then she left. Now she wants to come back again. No way. You think we're going to do like that? No. If we do that, then all of this that I've been preaching has just been a complete lie. You are you only at this moment. The next is a new version. It's a new instance. That is not you the moment before. So your minds can change anytime you want. That's perfectly fine. If you wish to rejoin, you can rejoin from that moment on. And if you wish to leave again, you can leave. It's always voluntary. The doors are always open. Come in when you want, leave when you like. But there have always been requests from this audience to me. Swaminarayan, can you please let us know when things are going on at the monastery? Because we don't get to see what's going on there. We only visit there once in a while when you invite us to come to the monastery for meditation retreats and whatnot. But oftentimes we don't get to do that. Some Sundays we visit the monastery, but most days we don't. So how can we get involved with what's going on there? So this is the answer then. How does that sound? Okay. But once again, I emphasize, it is not a solicitation. It doesn't matter if no one responds to it. It's perfectly fine. If no one responds to it, here's what I understand. It's not something we need to be doing right now. That's all. I don't stress over it, vex over it, oh my God, no one's supporting it, so I had better disrobe and go and earn some money and do it myself. I didn't come into the sasana for that, ladies and gentlemen. If the world doesn't need it right now, then the world doesn't need it right now. It's a good idea, perhaps, but it's not come at the right time. Isn't it? Sometimes we have the best of ideas, but they must come at the right time, at the right place. If it doesn't come at the right time, at the right place, no matter how good an idea it is, what do? You just park it and you move on. When the right time, the right place appears another time, then you bring that idea forward and voila, it happens. That's how it is. See, you are 16, you see a nice girl, you want to get married to her. Right place, right time? No, right? Even if she was Visakha. Not a Visakhian, I mean. Even if she was Visakha, the Maha Upasika, right? I mean, you can't think of a better spouse than that. You can't wish for a better spouse than that. But even if she was, if that was you, or if it was her, but you were only 16, you would still be too young. So you'd have to wait for the right place at the right time. Isn't it? So then any time people are not, though the world doesn't feel that it's the right time, the right place, the world lets us know. How? It stays quiet. No one talks about it. So then we look at it for a couple of days, a couple of weeks or so, and realize, not the time for it. Move it to a side, and we move on. It's not like we are itching all the time to get something done. My only itch is when I get to Nibbana, when I become an Arahant. That is the only itch I have. No other itches. And because no one can steal that from me, can steal my Sila, Samadhi and Prajna from me, my itch can only be itched by myself. No one can take it from me. Okay, so Pink Ketha will be live from tonight. We'll post a link on the common WhatsApp group. And we'll take it from there. Is that clear to everyone? Do you understand why I'm introducing this to you? Okay. And it's not about money. Please do understand that. In my mind, I appreciate your blessings, your well wishes, because that is what makes the whole thing work. Intentions. This is the Buddha speaking in his words. He says, Chetana ham bhikkhave kammang vadami. Your chetana, I don't speak of your chetana. Maybe you have someone called Chetana. Not your Chetana. Chetana, as the Buddha said, intention is what brings goodness as well as bad, good and bad. Right. I have something to explain to you today. Before I do that, I want to show you another short video. We initiated Little Britain. When was it? 4th of January, wasn't it? Yes. So we are just over 2 months now, isn't it? 2 months now, yes. So I wanted to give you a bit of a progress on how things are going. Because you all supported it. You were either there to lay a foundation stone, or you were there to lay the foundations for it to stand up tall and strong one day by giving your blessings, giving your well wishes. There are those who have been able to support it financially. There are those who might plan to do it in the future. But progress has been ongoing, and I wanted to give you an update on how things are progressing. Because this is the place where this idea was launched. So Little Britain is us making something happen in the world. It is a center where we will be learning and speaking and practicing languages so that we can share this truth in as many languages as possible throughout the world. You were there for the language initiative as well, the global language initiative where we launched all those channels, and work is ongoing in that space as well. A lot of our monks, Anagarikas and Anagarikas, are learning those languages, and you are seeing those channels popping up from time to time. So that will be the center where we'll be doing all this work. Short update on how things are progressing. You can't really see much has happened yet, but that's because all the work that has been happening has been going to preparing the land and the groundwork, foundation. I think from the next few months you will start to see actually something visible above ground taking form and taking shape. All I want from you is your well wishes, your blessings, and resolve for this to be a success. Money will come where it comes, wherever it comes from, but it's merits that make all of this happen. There are those who can support it, and those who can will. There are others who can support it. How? With their well wishes. And those who can will do that. Together, magic happens. Okay? So whenever I give these updates, it's not to tell you or to tease you. I really hope that you don't feel like that. Because there could be newcomers here as well. If you, this is the first time you're hearing about Little Britain, then ask around and find out what it is. If you join with the groups, then you will find out information about it. You can ask the Anagarika Mahathyas what it's all about. It's creating an oasis where we will learn the Dhamma to take it far and wide. Information is also available on YouTube and our website and so on. But for the others, it's just an opportunity for you all to rejoice. Rejoice in what we have done so far and what is yet to come. So from the deepest depths of my heart, I'm very grateful to all and each and every one of you. Together we make this happen. We are monastics, yes, but you are upasakas. Upasakas and monastics, bhikkhu, bhikkhuni, upasaka, upasika, are the fourfold sasana. You can't do this alone. You can't do it alone. When we get together, that's when it happens. Now, we've been speaking a lot about merit today. Pubbeta kata punyata, all done. Ready? Rearing to go. From here on, I need what? The other part. What is it? Attention. Focus. Be attentive. And for the duration of this next half an hour or so, I want you to forget everyone else in this room. It's just you and I. We are here to have a conversation. No one else in this room, so try and not interrupt anyone or chit-chat. Only for your sake. I mean, if you have to leave or something's super urgent, it's fine. Because this is profound, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm making every effort possible and within my means to try and convey this in as simple terms and language as possible, but believe you me, it's a struggle for me. So then if it's a struggle for me, I can only imagine how much of a struggle it must be for you, because you have to first listen to what I say and then give meaning, and that meaning is the meaning that you have, not the meaning that I have associated with those words, and then try and create in your mind the picture that I have in my mind. So this conveyance of wisdom is very difficult to do. I want you to remind yourself of something that happened yesterday. I'm going to tell you what it is, but be prepared. Prepare yourself right now. Prepare to remember something that happened yesterday. Let me say that again. I'm going to tell you about an incident that happened yesterday, and don't worry, it happened in all of our lives, so we'll all know about it the moment I say it out loud. It says it happened in all of our lives. But it's an event that happened yesterday, and I want you to prepare to remember it. Does that make sense? So, right now you have a question in your mind. What is that question? What is it? I'll answer that in a moment. But, in the meantime, until I answer this question that you have, prepare yourself to remember something that happened yesterday. Are you ready? Alright, get into that yesterday mode now, in your mind. Right, so you'll see those events flash in your mind. You don't know which one I might pick, but you have a timeline now, and you're sort of surfing in your timeline yesterday, trying to figure out and waiting to hear what Swami Nansi has to say. Okay? So we're going to put it into this box. What are we going to put into this box? This event that happened to you yesterday. Are you ready? When did this happen? Today? Yesterday. Ready? Actually, before that, let's do this first. I'm going to tell you something that's going to happen tomorrow. It's going to happen in all of our lives. And I'm going to write it in this box. So let's do this first, we'll come back to that later. It's going to happen when? Tomorrow. So in a moment I'm going to tell you what it is, and I want you to imagine that. Because it's pointless to say remember it. What makes sense is to say to imagine it, right? So here we are going to imagine, here we are going to do remembering. So let's do this one first, okay? So when is this going to happen? Tomorrow, right? Get yourself in the mood for tomorrow. Ready? I'm going to say it now. This event is going to happen tomorrow. Ready? Okay. Right. That's the experiment. What I want you to focus now is not on the event. Actually, I'm not going to say anything to you right now. You got yourself into a mood, didn't you? The yesterday mood and the today or the tomorrow mood. You can call it a mood or mode, whichever. When I said yesterday, in your mind, didn't you feel something? Like something special. Something special in the sense that this is something that is going to be from yesterday. Try and switch between these two moods for a second. Think of yesterday. Don't think of a particular event from yesterday. Think of yesterday. In other words, think of the past. Don't think of any particular event. I know events might come into your mind, but it's not about the event here I'm talking about. I'm talking about the mood of the past. Now switch to tomorrow. Don't you have a... Isn't there a difference in the way you feel that? The past and the future? The past almost brings a feeling of, you know, it's determined. You can't change it. It's done. And the future brings a sense of hope, some anticipation. Those things have their own distinct emotions. I don't know whether you can feel what I'm talking about, but I certainly can when I speak of this. So if I say, I'm going to talk to you about something that happened yesterday, even before I say it, you've gone into yesterday mood. See, just check whether that doesn't happen with you. If it doesn't, please get up and leave the room. And then think about tomorrow. I'm going to tell you about something that's going to happen tomorrow. Ready? See, when I say ready, you're already starting to wonder what it might be, and you're already in the tomorrow mode. You're in that mode, and then you wait for me to tell you what it is. If we go back to yesterday, you get into yesterday's mode or mood, and then wait for me to tell you which event from yesterday. The focus of my conversation right now is not about which event or what event it is, ladies and gentlemen. How you are able to go into these two moods, the yesterday mood and the tomorrow mood. And they have their very distinct sensations. These are all mental sensations, naturally, nothing physical. But do you not feel that sensation of the yesterday mood? If I said, no, actually it wasn't yesterday, day before yesterday. See, you can feel yourself almost jumping back another day. If I tell you, you know, last year, even before I say what it is that I'm going to say last year, you're already in the last year mood, aren't you? See, last year, when... See, isn't something happening within you right now? Next week, see, don't these words have a very distinct effect on you? When I say next week, is it just as if I had said apple? It's not, is it? If I had said an apple, it is not the same sensation that you feel when I say the word tomorrow, day after tomorrow, the day after tomorrow. In 2 days' time. But all I'm sharing with you, all I'm telling you are just words. These are just natural, normal, regular words from the dictionary. But do you realize that you have certain emotional responses to these words? And I want you to pay attention to that emotion. It's very subtle, but see if you can pick up on those emotions. And I'm going to explain to you what those emotions are in a moment. How you are a being of time. And where this time thing is all born, where it lives. Where does time come from? Where is the origin of time? What is the origin of time? But for that, I want you to first have this experience, this emotional sensations of time, this notion of time. It's not just the knowledge of time. When I say yesterday, there are two things to yesterday. One is the word and the knowledge of yesterday, but two is the emotional sensation that you feel about yesterday. And that's why I said, I'm going to tell you something from yesterday, and I primed you for it. Then let's try that again. Last week when I arrived, that's the feeling I'm talking about. Now come back to the present moment. See, that feeling's gone. Come back to now. Look at this. Look at this object. Actually, look at this object. Just pay complete attention to this object. That feeling's gone now, isn't it? On New Year's Eve, this year, now you're going back in time. Last Christmas, see, you're going back in time. For Christmas this year, now there's another, it's a different kind of feeling. Do you understand these emotional responses that you have to these words? It's almost like if someone said, I love you, and you have an emotional response. In the same way, you have an emotional response to words that convey the meaning of time. If I said the word apple, doesn't an apple appear in your mind? When I say the word apple, what's in your mind right now? An apple. I say a banana. What's in your mind right now? A banana. I say a monkey. What's in your mind right now? A monkey. I say yesterday. What's in your mind right now? What do you mean by yesterday? Is it big? So when I say apple, show me in your hand. I say apple. Give me a physical gesture. Show me apple. Okay. Banana. A jackfruit. Not poros. Like proper sized jackfruit. Ah. Okay. Monkey. So you're all pointing at yourselves. Okay. Then yesterday. Show me yesterday. You can't. But don't you have, isn't there a certain feeling for yesterday? There's a yesterday feeling, isn't there? There's a very distinct and very, very peculiar yesterday feeling. So just as these words, these nouns such as apple, mango, banana, coconut, monkey, I say these words and it creates, you respond to these words with an emotional response, there's a very distinct and, I'm not going to say the same, but similar response in your mind to words such as yesterday, the day before yesterday, last year, tomorrow. And once you create these mental emotions, now you have a bucket into which you are prepared to put objects in. Let's take an example. So, yesterday. Ready? You have a bucket. Don't you all have a bucket now for yesterday? If you were born today, would you have had this bucket? If you were born today? No, you would not have this bucket. But now you do, because you were not born today. You were born before yesterday. And you know this. Because you know that you were born before yesterday, today when I say yesterday, you have a bucket. And now you're waiting for me to tell you what event it is that we are going to talk about. I tell you, lunch. Lunch. Okay? Just think of lunch for a second. Not yesterday, not tomorrow. Lunch. Just think of lunch. Now, if lunch was served right now, no, I won't be able to keep your attention. Right, let's take lunch out. It's getting to that time of the day where if I say lunch, I won't be able to keep your attention. Right. Take this pen. This pen. This pen is all I want you to think about right now. Now think about this pen, but yesterday. So of course I can't show it to you now. Why can't I show it to you now? Because this pen yesterday is not this. Well, it's kind of this, but not this, because this is this today. I'm talking about this pen yesterday. Right? So this pen yesterday, can you imagine that? Try and think of that in your mind. This pen but yesterday. So then we put that into this box. This is this pen yesterday. So naturally this pen was here yesterday, wasn't it? It was here somewhere. Right? I know you didn't see it, but you can imagine what this must have been like. So if I met you tomorrow, I could say this pen yesterday and you would all remember it. Because you saw it today. Now think of this pen, but tomorrow. Think of this pen tomorrow. I'm going to hide it again. Why am I hiding it? Because I'm talking about tomorrow, not today. Right? But can you not imagine this pen tomorrow? Can't you imagine this pen but tomorrow? You can, right? Is it this pen? It kind of is, but it's not this. It's this but tomorrow. And here was this but yesterday. Right? So let's put that pen here as well. And here's the pen. So here's the pen, but here's the pen yesterday and the pen tomorrow. These three are identical. So this is the pen now, today or now. These three are identical, but your emotional response to these three are very different. Ladies and gentlemen, these three are identical. Answer this question for me. Again, a very an extremely hypothetical scenario here. Could I not, if I could steal your memories, could I not, unbeknown to you, swap these around? I take this one and I move it here. This one I put up there. Huh? Or take this and I then put it back here. And this I put here. Could I not do that? But I do it without your knowledge. And I have swapped the places of the three pens. But you still keep these emotional responses. The emotional response to yesterday, the emotional response to tomorrow, and the emotional response to today, or now. This comes from memory. That's why we call Namagutta. This comes from imagination. This is just vipaka. Right? But what are these things? The boxes. Is this box vipaka? Is this box yesterday? Is yesterday a memory? Think very carefully before you just throw an answer out. Is yesterday a memory? Some saying yes, some saying no. Some saying don't know. Some saying I don't know what you're talking about, Swami. Indeed. Yes. Is yesterday the memory, or is this pen the memory? Which one's the memory? The pen. The pen is the memory. Yesterday is simply a box or a container. I mean, you know, I'm not talking about a physical box. It's a compartment, right? It's an emotional container that you created in your mind, into which you drew the memory of a pen. Remember, you're doing it now. You're doing it now, at this moment. When does yesterday happen? Shall we do some more merits and come back here? When does yesterday happen? When is yesterday only valid to be referred to as yesterday? At present, right? Now, today. Today is the only day yesterday can be called yesterday. Because yesterday was not to be called yesterday. Isn't it? So then yesterday is only valid when? Today. So yesterday is a creation of today. So when does yesterday exist? Today. You got a headache now? I'll go through that again. Okay, now I think I can bring lunch. Because I've got your attention. Think about lunch. I'll think about, just lunch. Right? Lunch in general. It doesn't matter what it is. Think about lunch. Sandwich or rice or whatever it is you have for lunch. Lunch, right? Lunch. Imagine lunch is served. I ask you, let's assume that it's a sandwich, a cheese and tomato sandwich, right? And I ask you, didn't we have the same yesterday? So it's a question. Let's assume actually we had the same yesterday, a cheese and tomato sandwich. So I said, hey, didn't we have the same yesterday? And he's saying, yeah, we did. So think about the way that your mind processes this information that I just gave you. I asked you a question, didn't I? I asked you this. Didn't we have... So when I say didn't, you know that I am talking about the past. Didn't we have the same... Now you know I'm talking. You're talking about the sandwich yesterday. Your mind is on steroids the moment I say that. It has to construct and interpret each word that I've just told you, and then you very elegantly and eloquently answer this question and say, yes, we had cheese and tomato sandwich yesterday as well. As if it was effortless. But you don't realize there's a lot of work going on in your mind to be able to answer this question. I may not be able to cover all of what I'm trying to share with you today, given the time. But I will talk about it tomorrow, don't you worry. Or next week. That gave you hope. But if you know me well enough, you know that all my promises are false promises. 2 weeks ago I gave you a sermon and I promised you that yes, last week I would explain it to you. And this week I come here and I'm talking to you something completely unrelated. Yeah? I'm as bad as it gets. But it's alright, don't worry. We'll piece all of this together. It's an experience. It's an adventure. It's an adventure, you don't know what you might bump into next. Lunch. What's the lunch? Sandwich. This is the best I can draw sandwiches. It's a sandwich. Okay? I ask you the question, didn't we have the same sandwich yesterday? And you say yes. When you say yes, a sandwich has to appear. Because you know that it is not the same sandwich I'm referring to, because that sandwich was eaten. So it can't be the same sandwich. But that sandwich comes from memory. There's such a thing called memory. We call it Namagotta in Pali. Okay? We'll deconstruct memory another day to actually make more sense of what memory is and how memory works. But today I'm not talking about memory. I'm talking about this timeline that you experience. So into yesterday you put the sandwich. Today's sandwich or yesterday's sandwich? Yesterday's sandwich. Because today's sandwich is simply vipaka. This is vipaka. If this was a sandwich, today's sandwich is vipaka. The now sandwich is just a vipaka because you're seeing it right now and vipaka is drawing from your karmic strands and you're seeing it. That's what's happening. But then when I ask you, do you remember the sandwich from yesterday? And it had a little bit more cheese than it does today, doesn't it? Then you go back in my, let me see. See, you're creating something in your mind. This sandwich has to come from memory and it has to fall into the box of yesterday. Do try and understand that the sandwich came from memory, but the yesterday didn't come from memory. Because yesterday could not have come from memory. Why do I say that yesterday cannot come from memory? Why can't yesterday come from memory? Okay, think about this for a second. Today, I asked you to think about yesterday. You get that feeling, right? Tomorrow, I ask you to think, tomorrow when I see you, if I see you, I'd say yesterday. And again, the same feeling comes. If we did this in a month's time and I said yesterday, is it not the same feeling again? Not the event. I'm talking about the mental response to yesterday, the feeling of yesterday. It's always the same experience, isn't it? Then it cannot be something that comes from memory. Ladies and gentlemen, yesterday cannot come from memory. The events of yesterday absolutely come from memory. But those are the events. But let's deconstruct what's here. There's an event and there's yesterday. Think about tomorrow. And I tell you, well, we are going to have the same tomorrow. Same sandwich tomorrow. You know that it's not going to be the same sandwich. Because you're going to eat this now, therefore this sandwich is not going to be ready, available for you tomorrow. But we're going to make another sandwich. It's going to be similar. But we are going to have it when? Tomorrow. So when I say tomorrow, cheese sandwich, this comes from your imagination. The sandwich comes from imagination. But tomorrow, where does that come from? Can you take that from memory? No. You have to make it now. Because tomorrow is only valid when? Now, today. Now or today. Tomorrow can only be called tomorrow until the clock strikes 12. Meaning, today. 11:59 minutes past 59 seconds is the last opportunity you're going to get when? Today, to call tomorrow, tomorrow. As soon as it strikes 12, it's no longer tomorrow. So then tomorrow is only valid today. Yesterday is only valid today. If tomorrow and yesterday are only valid today, you tell me then, where do these things happen? When do these things happen? When does tomorrow happen? Today, right now. When does yesterday happen then? Right now. If these two constructs, if these two notions, yesterday and tomorrow, are both happening today, then it must be happening within you right now, right? Once again, I'm not talking about this sandwich. I'm not talking about this sandwich. I'm talking about this box. And this box. The box of yesterday and the box of tomorrow you build today. Let's walk in time to tomorrow. So today, what is the date today? The 8th. Okay. Let's imagine today is the 9th. So now today is tomorrow. Now don't mix up your todays and tomorrows, okay? At the end of this talk, we reset everything, right? And we are back to today. But now, let's go to tomorrow. So now we are on Monday. Now we are in Monday. We are in Monday or on Monday? On Monday? No, but we are in. Because I can't say we are on Monday. We have to be in Monday. Okay, so we are in Monday. So we are now in Monday. I think that's the first time I've said that. We are in Monday. So now that we're in Monday, if I ask you to think of yesterday, then you conjure up yesterday in your mind, and that yesterday is Sunday, but you do that tomorrow. When it is today, tomorrow. Do you recognize then, ladies and gentlemen, that these timely constructs, these time boxes, okay, I'm going to call them time boxes. These time boxes of yesterday, the day before yesterday, last week, last month, last year, 10 years ago, 100 years ago. If yesterday is cooked today, then 100 years ago was cooked when? Also today. If tomorrow is cooked today, then what about 100 years from now? Again today. Then the whole timeline is cooked when? Today, now. Your entire timeline, this notion of time, this notion of passage of time, all happens now, in this moment. Then, please tell me, is yesterday a thing of the past? Then why do you say like that? Yesterday is a thing of the past. Tomorrow is a thing of the future. Today is a present, that's why we call it a gift. Or something like that. Is yesterday a thing of the past? Then, yesterday is a thing of the present. Let's use the word present for now, because it's not really present at all. It's presence, not present. Remember? All timers? Yes? Hmm. This is present. This is presence. And absence is the opposite. Whereas this is present, future, past. Yeah? That's a whole new dimension. A dimension that does not really exist. A really good example of this glitching up is a deja vu. Put your hand up if you've ever had one. I have my hand up because I've had plenty of them. It is said as only a small proportion of humans have actually had it. Maybe only a small proportion actually express it. Maybe others have them as well. But there's a good number here as well. A deja vu, for those who haven't experienced one. Put your hand up, those who haven't experienced a deja vu. Or if you don't know what I mean by a deja vu. Good. There are some Swaminarayans at the monastery who don't know what a headache is. They've never had one. So they say. It could also be that they were born with one, right? Don't you think so? Because if you are born with a headache, you don't know what it feels like to be without one. Right? So then, that could also be true. So when they come and say, I've never had a headache, Swami, I say, no, you were born with one. So a deja vu, for those who haven't, because there were a few hands that went up, a deja vu is a feeling that something that's happening right now happened before. And you feel very weird about that. It's a very weird feeling. It's not simply memory from before. You know a feeling like, you know, this couldn't have happened before, but you have a feeling that it had happened, but you know, knowledge tells you, no, this couldn't have happened. Let's say you were at someone's funeral. Or your aunt's funeral. And you have a deja vu. That would be very weird, wouldn't it? Because this couldn't have happened before, surely. But you have a deja vu. So that's what a deja vu is. For those who haven't experienced it, it's a very weird and wonderful feeling. May you have many of them in the future someday. But for those of you who have had this feeling, you know what I'm talking about. See, a deja vu is when this system glitches up. Here's what happens when you have a deja vu. This is my interpretation. Others might have different interpretations, but here's what I understand, because I'm studying how the mind works and how the mind cooks up time, the dimensions of time. You take the present, which is a vipaka, because a deja vu happens in the present. In this moment, you see this, you might think Swaminarayan is holding this up. I'm sure I've seen him hold this exact duster like this, with this pen open and pointed at us. It was the black pen as well, and the backdrop was the same. He had the same drawings on the board as well. And you know, your knowledge says, no, that could not have happened. How? This is the first time he's drawn something like this. But then your emotion says, no, but I have this recollection of this having happened before. See, what I think, my hypothesis for this is this. Your mind is very adept at cooking up time. So it takes vipaka, which is what's going on right now, it cooks up a yesterday. That doesn't come from vipaka. It cooks up a day before yesterday, it cooks up the past. And what it does is, it puts this vipaka event into that box. And then you feel that this is an event that happened in the past. You don't do this intentionally, because there's no doer. It happens. You don't do this intentionally. You are uncomfortable with deja vus because you don't do it intentionally. But when you remember things from the past, you're comfortable with that. The reason you feel uncomfortable when a deja vu happens is because your knowledge, your common sense tells you, this is not compatible with my existing knowledge of the world. How could this event have happened before? But you have it nonetheless. Whereas when you remember something, that's perfectly valid. But the truth is, ladies and gentlemen, nothing happens in the past and nothing happens in the future. You have no past and neither do you have a future. When you think of a past event, here's what's going on in your mind. This is the event that comes from Namagotta. Namagotta is merely Dhamma. Mana and Dhamma. The mind coming into contact with Dhamma. When does that happen? Present. In the present. Let's call it present for now. In the present. And in addition to that, you make this box. You build a box, a past box. When does that happen? Also, now. So both these events happen now. But when you think about the past, you get this feeling that you're actually thinking about something that happened in the past. And you're merely recalling an event. It's not recalling at all. And this is why you sometimes make mistakes when you recall things from the past. If all you're doing is recalling events from the past, how is it that you can get your facts wrong? Because if it's just coming from the past, it must be right, because it's just happened, right? You can't change the past. If it's happened, it's happened. But how come sometimes you remember wrong details? It's not always accurate what you remember from the past. Because this is not the past at all. It is the present always. But what makes you feel that it's the past event is this time boxing. When does that happen? Also in the present. Then you tell me, what about yesterday's sandwich was a past event? What about yesterday's sandwich was a past event? The answer is, nothing about yesterday's sandwich was a past event. This sandwich is Manadhamma coming into contact now. The time boxing is also something you're doing now. So both these events, the sandwich as well as the boxing, not boxing, time boxing, both those events happen now. then what about it belongs to the past? Nothing belongs to the past. None of it belongs to the past. Think about the future. I tell you, I'm going to give this to you tomorrow. Think about that for a second. I propose to you that I'm going to give this to you tomorrow. Okay? Now, when I propose that to you, when I give you that promise, I'm going to give this to you tomorrow, here's what's going on in your mind. You take this vipaka, and then you create this box, the future box. When do you do it? Now. You create the future box now, and then you carefully slide this vipaka into that box. And then when I say, I'm going to give this to you tomorrow, you actually think that it's an event that's going to happen tomorrow. When actually it's an event that just happened right now. You know, the funny thing is this, right? When I tell you, I'm going to give this to you tomorrow, you've already done it, haven't you? I don't need to give you to the Ben then. Because it's already happened. Okay, you can look really confused. Some of you are like nodding away your head. Yeah, got it, Swami. I got it, got it, got it. Others are confused. Let me say that again. When I promise you that I'm going to give this pen to you tomorrow, okay? When does tomorrow happen? Now, where does it happen? In your mind. Where does this pen happen? I mean, the mental image of the pen? In your mind? Now. So has it not already happened? What? Me giving you the pen tomorrow? Hasn't it already happened? Yeah, then why you come and ask? Don't ask for me the pen again. Promise fulfilled. Haven't I? Because I've already delivered on my promise. So why do you come back tomorrow and ask me for the pen? Because here's what happens. Tomorrow will be your today, when today is your tomorrow, you will cook up in your mind tomorrow you will cook up a time box called the past, yesterday, and into that you will take from Namagotta, or you might be in this room and say, Swaminasa, this pen, again vipaka, Namagotta is also Manadhamma, which is also vipaka, no difference there. Again, that vipaka, you put into a time box called the past, and then you say, Swaminathan, you promised to give this pen to me yesterday. You know the funny thing is, when you come and tell me, Swaminathan, you promised to give this pen to me yesterday, well, that's what's happening right now. I'm sorry, I don't know how to explain this concept to you. When are you going to tell me this story? Can you still see that? At the back? Can you see what I just drew there? Okay. See, this is today. Okay? Tomorrow you're going to come and ask me for my promise. You're going to tell me, Swami Nahansa, this is tomorrow. Okay? This is today. This is yesterday. Let's say T plus 1, T minus 1. So this is tomorrow. Tomorrow you're going to come and tell me, Swami Nasa, didn't you promise me that you would give me this pen yesterday? Didn't you promise me yesterday that you would give me this pen? I said, yes. So where is yesterday? In your mind. When? Now. Because now is the only time you can make yesterday up. Yeah? So you have made the yesterday up in your mind, and the pen is now in your vipaka, because I can't put a pen into your yesterday box, can I? It's not something that I can do. It's only something that you can do. Because you're the one who makes that box. So I don't know when you're thinking up yesterday's box and when you're thinking about tomorrow's box. That's only your own choice, your own doing. So whenever you create your own box, and you're asking me the question, Swaminarayan, didn't you promise me yesterday that you would give me this pen? When you're asking me that question, you're already doing it. Doing what? Yesterday, because it's in your mind, and the pen is in it. See, only in your mind can promises be made and fulfilled, and promises be made and broken. So broken promises and fulfilled promises are both in your mind. Why do I say that? Here you have broken promises. Here are the promises. Broken promise and fulfilled promises. Here are potential promises. These are both created in the mind, and they're only created now. Because they're only created now, they exist when you think of it. It's like that wave-particle duality of energy. So when they carried out the experiment, the conclusion that scientists came to was they did a double-split experiment. I don't know if you remember from physics lessons at school. When light or energy passes through the double slit, at some points it acts as a particle, and other points it acts as a wave. So then scientists came to the conclusion that whichever one you observe, that is what is there. So the observer creates the observed. The presence of the observer is what creates that which is observed. So then when you ask me about a past event, it is something you make in your mind now. When you talk to me about a future event, it's again something you make in your mind now. Then there is no temporal past or a temporal future. Both these pasts and futures are present. Present constructs, present artifacts. They're both created in the present. How much of that made sense? Will you go back and listen to the sermon again? Okay. But I have another part to it before I conclude. I will make another false promise. I will cover this again next week, okay? Like the many sermons that I have promised that I would. Before I bring this to a conclusion, I want to explain to you why this happens. Now you know what happens. What happens is not the same as why something happens. But I think at least you got that that half. You know, that this part, just give me a nod whether this part doesn't make sense. The fact that the past and the future are both creations of the present. Did you all get that?
Yes.
Good. How do we confirm this? Yesterday is only yesterday, today. Because tomorrow, yesterday won't be yesterday. It would be the day before yesterday. Yeah? And tomorrow will only be tomorrow, today. Because tomorrow won't be tomorrow. Tomorrow will be today. It's like a tongue twister. How much would chop chop if a wood chop would come chop? This is worse than that. So are we clear on that then? These are both constructs of the present. These are present day constructs. Okay? Then you understand that the past and the future can only exist now, in the present. Right? So now you understand what I've just said. Here's why. Why it is that that is possible. Why it is that the past and the future can only be present in the present. It is because nothing in this world has a timeline. The world doesn't work on time, on the time dimension. Things that happen in the world, ladies and gentlemen, work because of causes. The principle that governs everything that happens is the principle of cause and effect. So whenever something happens, that happening is because of causes. And those causes must be present at the time that the effect must manifest. Again, when I say time, I don't mean the time, it's better to say the moment. I'll give a very simple example. See, this duster is now up here. It's up here because this is an effect. This being this distance from the desk is an effect. Yeah? This effect only manifests because the causes that keep it there manifest at this moment. This energy that I provide now cannot sustain this in the next moment. It's not like a do it and it's done. It doesn't remain there. For an effect to manifest, the causes must keep on sustaining it. So therefore nothing is ever done. Nothing is ever complete. Nothing is ever a job done. Everything is in a process. So this being here, up here, is a process. Now you might think, well, isn't this of course a process because it's quite dynamic. Well, you can even think about this, the pen holder. You think we can put it here and forget it? No, it's not. This is a very active process right now. There are forces acting on this very... It's a very live process. It's a very live process. This live process is keeping it here. Therefore, nothing can be an event of a past. So past causes lead to a past effect. Does not make any sense. Present causes lead to present effects. Future causes lead to future effects. Is, you know, that's only an imagination. It's a story that you can tell, but it's not something that actually happens at all. So if the past and the future are both creations now, then the mind has to have the raw materials to cook up the past and the future. What are those raw materials? Now don't just repeat by rote. You must be able to get this concept. The ingredients for a past and the future is the ignorance that there is such a thing called time. When the mind accepts that things exist, can you elaborate this word exist? How do you define existence? When I say something exists, what feeling does that convey to you? Indeed. It prevails on the dimension of time. Isn't that what existence means? To say that something exists means it prevails on the dimension of time. Therefore, when you speak of existence, immediately you have to have a dimension of the past, present, and future. Existence is only a creation of the mind. It happens because of jati. Jati is what makes you feel that you exist. And the very first feeling of existence is your sense of self. Don't you all feel that you had a past, a present, and a future? That is because you feel existence. When you feel existence, everything that comes into your scope are also given a lease of existence. Remember that existence does not appear, pop up out there in the world. It's your view of those subjects. So the truth is, this doesn't exist. It exists in your mind. In your mind, this exists. You have given this a lease of existence. Because you have given this elise of existence, you can imagine this in the future. But this can never exist in the future. Only your imagination of this can exist in the future. And this never existed in the past. But your memory of it, supported by your ignorance that this has an existence, does what? You create a box called the past and you put a recollection of memory into this. This is called a manadhamma. And then what happens? You think that it was this that existed in the past. Right. I know that not have made a whole lot of sense, especially if you are newcomers, that would have been a little bit difficult, a bit heavy. I suggest you watch this talk again to help grasp this. But I know you won't do it unless I tell you what I'm about to say next. So what? Okay, this, and so what? Why bother? What's the point? What's the point of understanding any of this? Why should I put another 2 hours, 3 hours to watch this if I don't understand what it was taught to me for? Well, here's the reason. So I'll leave you with the I told you the what, the how, and now the why. Why does this matter? The reason this matters, ladies and gentlemen, is because all your fears live in the future. All your sorrows live in the past. Tell me any fear that you have that does not exist in the future. Don't you have fears? Are you fearless? Fearless ones? Are you fearless? You all experience fear, right? If it's a dark alleyway, if you have to go down to your basement, and we don't have basements in our country, but in other countries they do. If you have to go into the basement and the light's not working and it's pitch black dark, and you hear some ominous sounds coming from the basement, like you see in the horror movies, how do they make their money? How do horror films make their money? Some of them are blockbusters. How do they do that? Because they capitalize on your emotion of fear. Where does fear live? In the future. Fear always lives in the future. Fear is an animal that lives in the house. This is the kennel. That dog lives in this kennel. You build the house and then fear creeps in. Tell me one thing that you are not sorrowful about that is not a thing of the past. And all of your sorrows are about events in the past, aren't they? Now do you understand why bother with this stuff? Because the moment you build these houses, right, it's not only recollections of past events and imaginations of future events that occupy these houses, but also, what else? Sorrow and fear. So then tell me, if you wish to be free of fear and sorrow, what one thing must you be able to do? You must be able to destroy this house. You must be able to destroy this house. Until you destroy this house, fears and sorrows will always be a curse in your lives. You have always cried, wept, lamented, and grieved about these things. Shoka and bhaya. That's why tanha jayati shoka and tanha jayati bhaya. Tanha is the maker of these houses. Attachment is what makes these houses. Attachment to what? Attachment to the notion of existence. When you're attached to the notion that things exist, the moment that happens in your mind, the past box and the future box comes into existence. Like an apparition, it just comes into existence. And the moment that happens, now this has a past, this has a future. If you want this and this breaks, you think that it is this that broke. You think that it is this that broke. This can never break. Okay, it's very heavy from here on. I'm seeing blank faces, a lot of blank faces in the audience. That's not a criticism by any chance, by in any way. I need to know when I have to leave it for the next lesson, right? The clock's telling me the same, but so are your faces. So one chapter at a time is fine. But I do encourage you to try and find a couple of hours to go back, and you can skip the first half. Listen to this part. I think we had 1 hour or so. The last hour or so of this talk, if you can go back and watch this again, it might be useful. Because to come out of delusion, you need to understand what delusion is. That is the only way out of delusion. The only way out of delusion is understanding what delusion is. So what is delusion after all? The delusion of delusion. What is wisdom then? Wisdom is the wisdom of delusion. Avijja of avijja is avijja. Ignorance of ignorance is ignorance. What is wisdom? Knowledge of ignorance. What did the Buddha discover under the Bodhi tree? Knowledge of ignorance. And his sermon, his discourse was, I have discovered the cause of suffering and it is ignorance. And then he went on to speak for another 40 years about ignorance. He spoke about ignorance. He spoke so much about ignorance. But until he became the Buddha, he was ignorant about ignorance. So then to be free of delusion, one must understand what delusion is. That is why I am trying to get this across to you, how these are products of delusion. And then once you grasp that concept, when the past and the future occur in your mind, you will be able to quickly grasp this by applying. Remember what we talked about earlier? Applying the Dhamma with your mind. That is the sasana, right? You will be able to apply the Dhamma with those events that happen in your life. And the moment the past and the future occur in your mind, you will quickly be able to apply the Dhamma and realize, wait, that is not a past or a future. That is merely a delusion of the present moment. And then you will realize, well, the moment you realize that, both fear and sorrow vanish. Therefore, you become fearless and sorrowless. Tanha vipamuttasa natthi soko kuto bhayam. Details of Pinketa will be posted on the WhatsApp group. And that, along with your presence here, will help you to understand the depths of the Dhamma. Right, shall we do a merit transfer? On the point of merit transfer, I thought it might be worth mentioning. A good lady came up to me last week and asked me, Swaminaza, can you actually transfer merits? Can you actually transfer merits? Because if that were a very good question, because if that were true, you can all stay at home and I'll do merits and come here and transfer to you. Like a blood transfusion. It's a very good question. Although we call it a merit transfer, this is a very conventional translation of the word punyanumodana. Right? I'm partly to blame because I'm the one who chose those words for our purpose. The better term is actually to rejoice in the merits that we have already done. The merits that we have already done, we rejoice in it. It's not a transfer per se, because you can't transfer like that. How can one person transfer the merit that they have done to someone else? But you can pick fruits out of the karmajarahan and transfer to someone else. There are no karmajarahan transplants. Can't do that yet. It's impossible. But what do we do? Then why do we say, you know, let us transfer these merits to our bhikkhus and bhikkhunis and upasikas, upasikas and mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters? Why do we say all that? to keep them happy. No, it's not really that. It's not that we can transfer it to them, to your dead ones and past ones and so on. You know, the merit transfer is merely a time that we take to be grateful. It's gratitude. Gratitude is very meritorious. That's why you will hear me say, let us transfer these merits to your mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and sons and daughters and so on, those who have been helpful to you, supportive to you, and they've guided you right from your younger years. When I say those words, what do you think in your mind? Will you have good thoughts or bad thoughts? Good thoughts. Thoughts of gratitude, right? So when you have thoughts of gratitude, you are already doing karma again. In your mind, karma happens again, thoughts of gratitude. And that goes and adds to your karmic strands. So then when you give gratitude to the universe, what does the universe do in return? Give you gratitude in exchange. So you get gratitude back. Whenever you give good, good comes back to you. It doesn't come back to someone else. It doesn't work like that. But there are some beings, right, because of their misfortune, there are some beings who can only take what is given. That's why they're called preta. The word preta is actually para he ata. Para is what? Others. Para is others. That's why it's called parajaya. What is loss in Sinhalese? Parajaya, right? So jaya to others. Jaya is jaya, victory to para. Para means others. So para jaya, parajaya. So para is others. Para he ata implies to extend your hand to others, looking for their support. To look up to others for support. To seek support from others. There are some beings in this universe, because of the way that they conducted themselves while they were human, typically not helping others, not giving others a chance, not giving others opportunity, taking away what belonged to others without their consent and so on, today they are deprived of many things. And therefore, because they had taken from others, today you can only get if others give. Do you see how all this comes back? Every karma is a boomerang. That's why we have to be very careful, ladies and gentlemen, about the thoughts that we have in our minds. Every karma is a boomerang. So when you deprive others of something, you are deprived of it until and unless they give it to you. Pretas are like that. They are a kind of being who don't have anything to eat or to wear or anything of that sort. No material comforts unless it is offered to them personally. That is what you do with this Jalaspirikata Puja. You offer it to them. You call them by their name and you offer it to them. And when you do that, that's when they can rejoice in it. So again, once again, understand this. It is not that your giving they can take. They become privy to it when in their mind they accept it from you. What you give is only the conditions, the environment, the factors that are conducive to that. But in their minds, they feel that they cannot take whatever is not given to them. So when you offer it to them by their name, in their mind, they have a sense of gratitude. That's what happens. Because they are grateful to you for offering it to them. And what does that sense of gratitude give them then? The object that you're offering. See, again, they only get what they give at that moment. So when you do a Dolaspirikara and you offer it to the Mahasangha, you give an almsgiving, do an almsgiving, do an Atapirikara or something, you know, offer it to the Mahasangha, if they are happy about that, that was one of the questions that was asked, what if they're not happy about it? Then they don't get nothing, nothing at all. But if they're happy about what you have done, and the fact that you have done it in their name, in their minds they have a sense of gratitude towards you, towards the Mahasangha, towards the recipient of that offering. And that gratitude then makes them deserving of whatever it is that you have offered. Do you see how ungratefulness deprives you of practically everything? Because they were ungrateful, today they have nothing to their name, but the moment they become grateful for something, they get it. That is what you do with your merit transfers. That's why you call them by their name. That's why when you have this Haddhavasa Dana and Tummasa Dana and so on, you do merit transfers and you get the Swaminas to say their names, right? Because they still believe that these are their names. They have no understanding of the Dhamma. So they think it was they who existed in the past, and it is they who are there today, and it is they who will live in the future. Ignoble sentient beings had the chance to understand the Dhamma but didn't. All they were interested in was, how do I hoard things for myself? How do I make more money? How do I make more wealth? How do I further myself and protect my self-interests? Therefore, there was no sense of gratitude, no sense of gratefulness. All they thought about was themselves, and look where that got them. They got themselves to a position where today nothing can be theirs until they have a modicum of gratefulness. And the moment they have that, to that extent to which they have gratitude, they get. It's amazing how the world works, isn't it? Teach your children gratitude, ladies and gentlemen, if nothing else. Please, for their sake, teach them gratitude. Otherwise, they will end up with nothing. What you give them is not what they will have. What they are grateful for is what they will have. Some parents, all they do is give their children. They keep on giving their children education, money, cars, property, wealth, all sorts. But they don't teach them to be grateful for that. And when you don't do that, it's only a matter of time until the universe steals all of that back from them. But for whatever it is you are grateful, that you shall have. See how it all works? So thank you to the question. Thank you to the person who asked the question, and thank you for the question. See, now you have all learned. So now you understand what a merit transfer is. Can you transfer? No. This is your opportunity to be grateful. To whom? To everyone. Mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, employers, employees, the Mahasangha who sacrificed a life and limb to protect the sasana and bring it forth today, to my teacher Guru Swami Nuhanse, and all the monks and anagariks and anagarikas who live at the monastery, who are the tree on which this fruit grows. If you are glad about this sermon, then you must only be glad about the causes that make this possible. That is what we do when we do a merit transfer. So are we ready to do that now? Let's do it. Let us all take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired today by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, listening to the Dhamma and creating a conducive environment for all to come along and practice the Dhamma. First and foremost, let us transfer this message to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down to the generations of the noble lineage. In the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us transfer this message to the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us transfer this message to the Mahanayakas, the Anunayakas of all of the chapters who make it their life's purpose to protect and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer this message to my teacher Guru Swami Nuhanse, as well as all the monks resident in the monastery and the Anagarikas and Anagarikas of the monastery. Let us transfer this message to Our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes all of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our employers and our employees, our teachers and everyone and anyone who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the Nimas, gods and deities who have committed themselves to fulfill and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us transfer these merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer these merits to our forefathers, our ancestors, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life and practice the path. Let us transfer this message to members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as those who lost their lives in the wars, be they friend or foe. Let us transfer this message to those who lost their lives in natural disasters and calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods, pandemics and so on. Reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been friends of ours, parents of ours, siblings of ours, those who helped us, supported us and assisted us in many ways and shapes and forms. And therefore, with an abundance of compassion, loving kindness and a sense of gratitude, let us transfer all these merits to all. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born the woeful plane, say, redeem themselves and be born the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we'll be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may you and everyone who's helped make this program a success become a rahatan vahanse or an arahatiranin vahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Sri Sambuddha Sasana itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. And the members of the Mahasangha will transfer the blessings to you. Raga ginnen nidetva, desha ginnen nidetva, moha ginnen nidetva, nibbana parama sukhayan. Sukhita taravetma Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetma Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satmayo Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetma Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetma Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetna Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivan sapa Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Tunruvange suvisi ananta maha guna belen Silu loka silu satyoma Nibbana parama sukhen sukhita taravetva Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.